Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
For those of you who are listening live, thank you for standing by. We had some technical difficulties, but they're all solved. And as I said before, today is a very important show. In fact, it's a longer show than normal. It's probably going to go about 3 hours because it's the only way to do this right. There isn't a person within the physical culture slash fitness slash nutrition community that has not been impacted by Dr. Fred Hatfield, either directly or indirectly. And so we are going to do a tribute show. We have 6 guests on today that knew him intimately, and they will share stories about the man and his life. And my co-host today, and really the person who put this show together, and I thank him, is Ken O'Neill. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing well. And it's an honor to help celebrate Fred's life.
Well, and we said something before in the first show, in the first run of this show, before we had some technical problems, and that is that one of the wonderful things about Dr. Fred Hatfield is that he never stopped growing, even though he aged. He was never one of those guys who looked back at his career and his contributions to physical culture, sort of melancholy and went, oh, you know, it sucks today. These guys, he was always current. He was always contributing. He was always in the now of physical culture. He never became a sour guy. You know what I mean?
Well, I have a little different view of that. I agree fully. I would say that Fred embodied the personality type of a physical culturist. In our generation, that sort of went away. The people before us, the generation before us, it rubbed off on some of us. And the physical culturist is a person that questions everything. We were being shuttled into allopathic medicine, and physical culture gave us the wherewithal to ask questions, to cultivate doubt, to be a walking question mark.
Interesting.
Which means you're a lifelong learner. I think physical culture in a new version, which is what Fred and I talked about a lot, is our evolutionary tip.
Yeah. Interesting. Our first guest today is a former business partner of his, and that is Sal Aria. How you doing, Sal?
I'm doing just great.
Thank you for being here, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. It's an honor and a pleasure.
So, and Ken, I'm going to defer to you because you really put this whole show together. People should know that this show is really your machination. You located the guests, an amazing group of guests to talk about Fred's life. So I'm going to turn this over to you, and I'm going to ask you to start off with Sal and what you want to get out of Sal.
I'll start off, but I'm going to make a rule. You and I have great synergy, so let's do it together.
Trust me, I can't be silent for very long, so don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Go ahead.
Sal, you and Fred, with the ISA alone, have made a marvelous and important impact with personal training, with physical culture. One, empowering people to fulfill their passion by becoming top trainers. How did you guys come up with the idea of doing that?
Ken, it was interesting at the time when I met Fred. We were both working with the U.S. Olympic Elite Athlete Program, the shot put, javelin, discus, hammer throwers, down at a place called Cota de Casa. And under Dr. Gideon Ariel's expertise in filming these athletes, and I listened to Fred speak, and that was the first time I had heard him speak. And so I invited him to Santa Barbara, and we developed a friendship thereafter, and he was training for his competitions, and I'd be down in Los Angeles with him at the time. And I saw a gal who had an educational program, and I respect her tremendously. She's one of my best friends, closest friends, and was a vicious competitor of ours in the International Sports Sciences Association, Linda Pfeffer from AFA. At the time, was Aerobic Fitness Association of America. And Linda had put together a program for training gals, mostly gals at the time, how to step up and down on boxes. And she was certifying these people, providing an educational program. And I knew that there were employees in gyms who needed a level of education, way beyond that of stepping up and down in a box. So I called Fred and I said, listen, we need to put together a curriculum for the kids that work in gyms so that we could standardize that level of education and what they're telling clients and gym members and how they're taking care of them. Because, you know, they deal with the domain of weight training, aerobic conditioning, cardiovascular conditioning, nutrition, flexibility, and then a client's positive, active lifestyle. So the domain, those five key elements needed to be addressed in an educational program. And at the time I was speaking to and writing to doctors, but Fred could take the most complicated scientific information and turn it into understandable knowledge that anyone from the least common denominator to the PhD, MD, could understand and retain. And it's difficult because if you take scientific data out and you read it, it puts me to sleep. I read it, I wake up with it on my chest. But Fred could take that same scientific report and he could turn it into this incredible article, which he did so eloquently through the various magazines. And at the time he was working for Joe Weider and as an editor for Joe. And so Fred came up to Santa Barbara in the early 80s every weekend, and we huddled up in my library and wrote the first curriculum and textbook for standardizing personal fitness training. There, at that time, there was no other personal training certification course. So we launched our three-ring binder, 300-page, 350-page personal training textbook and study guide, and that was how it all began.
And what year was that, Sal?
Oh, that was in the early 80s in the mid 80s when we began, and I think by 1988 to 87, 88, we launched the first text.
How was this received by the medical orthodoxy at that point in time? Because one of the interesting things that I learned about Eugene Sandow when reading all three of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, is that he was actually given a place as some sort of minister of health by the then King of England, and it really pissed the doctors off in England, but it was clear that he understood how to keep people healthy. How was your the introduction of this information received by doctors?
Well, you know, it still, to this day, and please take this respectfully, but in general, personal trainers are just thought of as big guys with big arms or big gals with the jump up and down on boxes by that community. There still isn't that embracement and that strong referral from the medical profession to the fitness profession that there could be. And it's just not there. At that time, it was because you have to realize that at the beginning of a profession, there were very few personal trainers out there. So that we were certifying and educating, and it didn't grow until today. And now, of course, they've got television shows, and you mentioned personal training, and it is commonplace terminology and understood as a profession. But still, if you think about the medical profession today, the sick care profession, right? Let's be straight. It's the sick care profession, and that's what they're doing, is they're addressing the sicknesses. And to really be a healthcare profession, you have to address those five key elements, right? Weight training, right? You got to have weight training in there. There has to be resistance to create muscular development, to create all of the things that go along with that, right? So you got weight training, cardiovascular conditioning, even walking is part of cardiovascular conditioning. Flexibility, you got to have flexibility, nutrition, sensible nutrition, and a positive, active lifestyle. So if medicine embraced those five key elements, there would probably not be so much illness and sickness and death, correct?
Yeah, about 70% of it would go away. I might add from a historic perspective, It was in the 1910s when pharmaceutical medicine was being developed per the Rockefeller agenda, and this is not conspiracy theory. This is Oxford University Press research. Medical schools wished to survive and receive grant money, professorships, medical buildings, and so on, had to remove from their curriculum subjects that were demeaned and then demonized, that include chiropractic, that included physical culture, that included nutrition, and a number of other things that today are called alternative and still demeaned and dismissed. So you guys did something exceptionally bold. My intro comment about Fred and some of us perpetuating physical culture, we did that at great expense and great confusion in the culture of the 50s and 60s. We were wrong, but we're turning out to be very right.
Yeah, in much of what, if we take that even a step further, when Fred was working with Joe Weider, and Joe was a patient, a very dear friend for 30-some-odd years, and, Joe was persecuted for promoting weight training in articles, promoting weight training amongst athletes, and they kept saying, oh, you can't use weights on it with baseball players. They'll be
muscle bound. Remember the term?
The ball and they can't throw.
They would be muscle bound. My dad, I was reading a magazine one day that my dad had, and there was an article in there about weight training causing muscle bound men.
Oh,
they couldn't move. Yeah, yeah.
It's
so funny to look back on that and to realize that they were that Fred, Joe Weider especially, right, who was a big influence on Fred for those years, they were so far ahead of their time. And take it back, fellas, to 1895 and Lionel Strongforth coming out with courses on physical culture and the importance of eating and weight training and breathing clean air and good bowel movements. So this stuff that we're doing today has been around for an awfully long time, and yet it's been stiff-armed by the conventional, medical direction of care. But make no mistake about it, if I had my leg blown off or I had pneumonia and I was sitting on a respirator, I wouldn't necessarily wanting to bench press that day.
Sal, I want to use this time very efficiently. I have to ask you, who influenced Fred? Was Bernard McFadden who influenced Fred?
Gee whiz, I think he had many, many, many influences over the time, and I wish I would have asked him that question.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Because Joe Weider, of course, he became very, very close with Joe through his time at Weider Publications, and Fred was a historian of great physical culture backgrounds, and so I think that there were many. I know that McFadden was one, and all of the strength men were previous to him, and he had a passion to just exceed and excel at whatever he chose to do.
Was he professionally trained in a specific discipline, and then physical culture kind of took over his life?
I think it evolved into him understanding how big of a role it plays in health.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was any one specific incident.
Ken, I'll defer to you now.
Well, my thought on that, and I have to be careful because it's certainly autobiographical saying it, is I believe that those of us, Fred was 2 years older than me, came about in a time when there was very little literature on how to work out with weights. We had to go back. We had to scour and read anything we could get our hands on, which put us in reading Hockenschmidt and Sandow and Bernard McFadden and just that whole world of physical culture that had blossomed immensely until about 1930-35. And it made us historians in a way, but it filled our passion to understand what we were doing. Normative medicine wasn't giving us any answers, and we wanted answers. We wanted to succeed. You throw an alpha male into anything, and they want to win.
Especially Fred.
Yeah, exactly. And Fred lived with a big passion for a lot of things, which in his mind were interrelated. They weren't disciplines that you could fragment and dismiss or
separate,
not pay attention to. Yeah. Yes.
Right. So, Sal, in a brief kind of Reader's Digest version, what would you want people to know about Fred Hatfield above all else?
He changed the world. And I'm not saying it subjectively. It's not my opinion. It's an objective fact. Think about it. Over the course of time, with all of the books that he published in fitness, health, nutrition, all of the articles he wrote for Joe and for Vince McMahon through the various publications and other publications that picked up his works, through the internet and then through the ISSA. You know, the International Sports Sciences Association has over 250,000 kids who have gone through our programs around the world in 92 countries. So if you take each kid, let's just cut the number in half. Let's just say it's 100,000 people, but it's not. Let's say it's 100,000 people. If those 100,000 people just influenced 10 people within their circles of influence, because of the work of Fred, he's influenced yet another million. So Fred changed the world for the better. He inspired so many, because if you think about weight training and the effects of fitness and how someone can go from not having a job to now owning a gym and influencing all of the members of the gym. Real quick, to show you how far-reaching, cut me off if you have to, but to show you how far-reaching Fred was, we were in Fredrikstad, Norway, a little town way on the top of the earth, and it was for the World Championships in powerlifting. He was the team coach, I was the team doc, and we're walking down the street towards the evening, and I'm wanting to get to dinner, and we're walking to the restaurant, and he spots a little sign. And it said gymnasium. And he bumped me in the shoulder and goes, "Hey, look, let's go check out that gym." So we walked down the stairs and open up the door, and the guy behind the counter, and I'm looking up on the wall behind the fella who is behind the desk, and there's this life-size picture of Fred squatting. And here we are in this little town, in this little place on earth that no one would know about. And the guy looked like he saw a ghost. He looked, and he jumped over the desk, and he ran to Fred, and he dropped to a knee holding his hand, and he goes, "Dr. Fred Hatfield, I am so honored, so pleased." And Fred's looking at me, and I'm looking at Fred like, "Oh, no, I can't even believe this." So an hour and a half later, after he called every friend in Fredrikstad, Norway, every gym member to come down and meet him and sign autographs, I was able to barely get Fred through the door that we came in because his head had blown up tremendously. I got him through the door, and we were walking to the restaurant, and after the first drink, we sat there, and he nudged me in the shoulder again, and he goes, "Did you see those kids? They all looked at me like I was a god or something." And I said, "Fred, you were. You are the god of fitness and training. You are the god of squat." And he, of course, loved it. But to show you how far-reaching that was, we traveled all over the world together. That happened again in Australia. It happened again in Hawaii, another gym with a big poster, and the same sort of a thing happened. And so if I could say anything, Fred changed the world for the better and influenced people to help others and to become great at what they did.
It's obvious that you've spent a lot of time with him because you're – impression of him is spot on. Would you agree, Ken?
Oh, absolutely.
I felt like he was, because he's been on the show quite a few times over the past 12 years, and you really did sound like him. You were channeling him. Really, really. It was fantastic.
The story that comes to my mind is he was at some program, I don't know when or where, and someone asked another famous power lifter, who I'll not name, for advice, and the guy told him, "Buy my book." Fred got the kid aside and told him what to do. Fred went out of his way helping people. His Facebook page was just constantly helping people.
Well, I think it's interesting. We did a show the other day with Dr. Jeff Galini from All American Pharmaceuticals, and he was an IFBB pro back in the day in the 80s, and we talked about, and he was talking about caloric zigzagging, and then someone, and then I, so when I heard that Fred had passed, I pulled a couple old shows out and I reran them, and someone said that in one of the shows Fred talks about caloric zigzagging, and Jeff Galini came forward and said that's where I learned it from. And so, you know, the irony is that today people talk about caloric zigzagging as a way of gaining muscle and losing body fat, and it's almost like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. We could probably play 4 degrees of Fred Hatfield. Everything that people talk about in bodybuilding, in powerlifting, in physical culture, in sports nutrition, probably can take 3 leaps back to coming out of Fred Hatfield's mouth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And periodization and consciousness aspects. Yep.
That's the other thing about the guy, right? He was contrary to the common idea of what a person who lifts heavy weights is all about. He was sensitive. He was introspective. He was self-effacing. But more than that, he appreciated the entire human being. It wasn't just about how much you could bench or squat, but were you a complete human being? Were you spiritual? Were you introspective? Did you meditate? Did you take care of your mind? And that's something that is rare today. I can see why he would have some level of frustration with where physical culture has gone today. But, you know, we're trying. I've been trying for 12 years to bring it back to that, and it's been successful. I know a lot of people now who used to be bodybuilders. I say used to be. They still are. But they call themselves physical culturists now because they're paying attention to their bowel movements and their sleep and their brain and their mind and everything else.
Yep, yep. It's funny. It does go back to the basics, doesn't it, really?
Yes.
And Fred always knew that. He never needed to deviate from it. And just like he'd say, well, you know, the ivory towers can prove it, but we've already done it.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that was one of the greatest, you know, like I said, he could take the scientific data that was out there and he could interpret it so that everyone can use it and that it didn't just get stuck on a shelf.
Or in a cookie cutter program. One of the incredible benefits of your program, the ISA program, is that it teaches principles, not core dogma.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
student can come
individualistic
away from that.
And personalized because every body is different, right?
Yes,
exactly. That's
yeah. You guys were talking about so today the big buzzword is individualized medicine, but the reality is that you guys introduced that concept way back then. From a training aspect, not everybody needs to do this weight with that movement. And that, you know, it was all about what that person could do to get them to go up that ladder. And that's what,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And Fred was so good at teaching the importance of recognizing the differences in individuals as you're developing a training program. I mean, a classic example, I was a swimmer in high school, and you know, my sophomore year I sucked. I was, you know, I did 800 meter, you know, the 400 and the 800 meter, and I remember my coach coming up to me after my sophomore year in front of everybody, and he said to me, "Hey, Sal, you coming up for swimming next year?" I said, "Yeah, I guess. I'm a sophomore. What do I know?" He goes, "Well, don't, because you suck. Pick something else."
Oh my gosh!
And so that summer I saw a little ad by an Olympian who was holding a camp down at the local college pool, and so I rode my bicycle down there and told the Olympian my story, and he goes, "Well, jump in, give me a 400 meter." So I jumped in, and I'll never forget, because when I touched the wall after I was done with the 400, he looked down at his watch and he goes, "Yeah, you suck." And I looked at him. He goes, "Have you ever tried sprinting?" I said, "No." He goes, "Well, push off and give me a 50." So I gave him a 50. And he said, "Get up out of the water. Get up on the blocks and give me a 50. So I went up out of the water, and he goes, "Man," he goes, "you're a sprinter."
Mm.
So that coach changed my life, because my entire high school and college that I swam and played water polo, I was the sprinter.
Interesting. I love that.
And it was because that individual, that coach, John Gray, at the time, recognized that I didn't have a red fiber in me, but I had a lot of white fiber. And so that was what Fred could describe so eloquently, because if you're trying to train Mr. or Mrs. Jones and they are solid white fiber and you're trying to put them on a bicycle for 2 hours, it isn't going to work.
Yep.
So, you know, that whole scientific basis, John Gray didn't quite understand necessarily, I'm assuming, he didn't necessarily understand the science behind it, but he knew that there were sprinters and there were long distance and intermediate distance.
He looked at you and instead of forcing you to do something you weren't built to do, he found what you were built to do and turned you onto that. And that's a wonderful, wonderful metamorphosis for a young person. Listen,
but Fred did the same thing in lifting and in the training and in training our trainers to create programs that were specific to the needs of the clients. And Fred could do that like no other.
We have to cut this interview off now, unfortunately.
Aww. But it's been a pleasure.
Oh, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing these stories with us.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you. It's
an honor. And here's to Fred. He's up there, like I said, he's up there training St. Michael's archangels right now.
No, he's nudging one of them right now and looking down and going, they're talking about me.
Yeah, they're talking about me.
Yeah,
hey,
look.
Did you hear that?
They think I'm a god.
If you were to have seen him that evening, oh, man, when the kids dropped to a knee and grabbed his hand like they were holding the hand of the Pope or something, you know?
We have to end it here.
You guys have a great rest
thank
of the
you.
Interviews, and here's to Fred, and thank you very much for doing
don't
this.
Hang up. Don't hang up yet, Sal.
An incredible man.
Sal, don't hang up yet, okay?
Let me
go to break first, because Ken O'Neill is coming back with us. We're going to have Josh Bryant on when we come back, so stay tuned. We've got
more.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizol, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizol works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs, but the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more. Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Ketocana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Ketocana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketocana banner ad today.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the Da Vinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless, and the Da Vinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the Da Vinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in now live, this is a tribute show to the passing of Dr. Fred Hatfield. And we are talking to people who knew him intimately. And Ken O'Neill is my co-host and really the thrust behind putting the show together, because Ken reached out to all the people that we have as guests today and made this happen. Our next guest is Josh Bryant. Ken, why don't you – hey, how you doing, Josh? First, let me say that, okay?
Doing very well, thank you.
Ken, why don't you go ahead and start off with Josh. Josh is a powerlifter, correct?
That's an understatement.
Strongman, powerlifter, okay.
Wait. Tell us some of your lifts, Josh, and the body weight you did the band.
Yeah, I've done a 909 squat, I've done a 620 bench raw, 800 deadlift raw. I was in a 308-pound weight class, and now I strength coach a lot of different people in powerlifting, bodybuilding, strongman, and some regular athletes as well. And I've gone on to be a best-selling author, influenced by Fred Hatfield, of course.
Real quick before we get on, plug, you have a gym. Please plug your gym, your website, or anything like that.
Okay, I don't have a gym, but I have a number of books on Amazon. You look at my author's page, Josh Bryant, best-selling books called Jailhouse Strong. And then I have my website, joshstrength.com, spelled out how it sounds. And then I'm on YouTube. My username is Jailhouse Strong. On Instagram, Jailhouse Strong. And then my Facebook's the Josh Strength Method.
Okay. Go ahead, Ken. Take it away.
And I met Josh with Fred in San Antonio, yep, the last weekend of the last Sunday of January in 2016.
Yep.
Yep, and that was one of the instances of their. Fred had invited me to do an hour program on mind. The overall program is one that Josh and Fred were doing all over the country, maybe over the world. An ISA-sponsored program on powerlifting. So tell us, how did you come to meet Fred? Did you go through ISA first, or his books, or what happened?
Well, so to make a long story short, as I was in high school, I was I basically was running a gym, and when I was up there, I'd have you know, a lot of free time to be there at night, so I'd read a lot of his books and things like that. So then I went through ISSA. Got certified through ISSA and did all pretty much every single program they have. And I'd gone on after that to write a couple of, you know, best-selling books. And then it was 2012. There was like, go backwards a second. So we did some work for ISSA, and it was 2010. Fred, they said it had to get approved by Fred. It got approved by Fred. And now there wasn't much there, but then in 2012, I guess since I'd done more stuff, they're like, why don't you get Fred to proofread it? I'm like, of course I will. So, he proofread it. And the first time he said, he read it, and he's like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about in those words. You got to rewrite this. Okay. And then, you know, from then on, he went on to like guide it, edit it, feedback. And then, 2014, Paul, who's one of the heads, doing a great job running ISSA right now, him and Patrick Gamboa, they contacted me and said Fred had requested, to do, an update on their CFT, the Certified Fitness Trainer course. And they said he requested to work with me. So I guess he must have liked a lot of the bodybuilding work that I had done. So we went through about a 6-month process and we totally rewrote, we updated that book 100%. Every single thing in there we examined, and I worked with Fred on that, and we had a really good working relationship. Finished that, and then we ended up writing a dumbbell book together, independent of ISSA, and it's called A Complete Guide to Dumbbell Training. And then after that, Fred asked me if I'd go on a seminar tour, and it was be like 3 seminars, and they did a lot better than expected. But so then we just started touring all over the country and pretty much did, you know, probably if you count, we did it all over the world, literally. So we probably did 40 seminars together.
So it sounds to me like Fred really took a liking to you. Did he ever say to you, did he ever say to other people and it got back to you that you reminded him of himself when he was younger?
He did say that when he'd read some of my stuff. Yeah, he would say that a lot. So
yeah, I had a feeling.
That was the cool thing about him. He would always give you like straightforward feedback. Like he wasn't one of these guys that would just criticize your work for no reason, but he also wouldn't pray. He just straight up shot straight. He might say, this is the best thing I've ever read. Or he might say like, this sucks. And he'd be totally truthful. And so we had so many conversations about training and life and like literally into the wee hours of the night. So like seminars were like, I told Sal, thought a few years ago about going back and getting a PhD. And, I'm really glad I didn't, cause I had the chance to travel with Fred. And I think, you know, it's worth 100 times more than any paper degree university could give me.
And Ken, what Josh just described about Ken, about, Fred influencing how the book was rewritten kind of speaks to what Sal said a moment ago, that Fred had this uncanny ability to reduce things down to palatable, easy to understand, but written in a way where you wanted to keep writing and not fall asleep. And it sounds to me like that's one of the things that he did for one of Josh's early books. Am I off base on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can also, as Josh was telling the story, I was going through memories of my own of Fred helping me edit and reminding me constantly for years that writing that's readable is addressed to a 6th grade reading mentality,
mm-hmm.
which I overshoot too often.
So would you say, Josh, that one of Fred's many gifts, and he was clearly a very gifted human being in so many different areas, but
sure.
one of his gifts was that he had a skill in communication.
Absolutely. I mean, no one could deny that 100%. He could explain, you know, he's one of those guys that could be, you know, at some science convention talking on the level with the head, you know, the head of the science department at a major university. Could also be having a beer with a construction worker and explain, you know, the science behind getting stronger. 100%. That's one of his gifts.
So it sounds to me like he really did mentor you. He was a huge influence on who you are today.
100%.
So, I mean, I have to believe that when you learned of his passing, that you were probably crushed.
I was crushed. We were literally, okay, so that was May 14th. May 18th, we were set to meet up in Niagara Falls, and we canceled that, obviously, because of I wanted to go to his funeral. And we were going to do a seminar then, and then we were going to set May 28th. We also canceled this to leave to go to Denmark. So we had a lot of things
in the works.
We were in the middle of some things. We had a lot of things, like a lot of ground to conquer. It wasn't like, you know, from a selfish standpoint, it wasn't like we were done, you know, kind of, we were just getting started. I felt like, so
do you feel,
really,
do you feel,
really, really hard.
Josh, do you feel that because of his age, he was actually, pressing harder to get stuff done and get it out of his head and into the world?
I didn't know him before, so I don't know how he, like, you know, what his was doing before this. So, like, on a personal level, I would say this. He was definitely not slowing down. If you actually go on his Facebook, look at pictures of him from 2012 to now. He looks younger when he died now than he did 5 years ago. So I felt like he was, like,
well,
he was kind of started off walking. And he was gotten to jogging, striding. He was at a full sprint. Yeah, I think, like, he was really onto it. Yeah.
Ken, what do you think? Ken
problems.
Ken, do you think that because of health problems that he realized that the finish line was closer than he wanted it to be? Did he ramp up and try to work harder to kind of get all that stuff done? A lot of people, when they see their mortality coming, they work harder.
I don't have that sense. If you remember 3 years
either.
Ago, October, I had a myocardial infarction and two episodes of heart failure.
Right.
And Fred was there as a friend. And, you know, his mentoring of that was get up, you know.
Get moving.
It ain't over.
Yeah.
And, you know, if anything, the effect of catastrophic illness or incidents is that a deepening of our gratitude for being alive and our responsibility to reach out and be of benefit to our world.
Interesting.
Yeah, I got a sense that he was definitely trying to do that and was accomplishing it.
So, Josh, what do you think? Tell us what you want people to know about Fred Hatfield that you learned about him. Tell what would you like people to take away from your discussion today?
I think one major thing people need to keep in mind is he was giving back a lot. So he was like not just, I mean, the knowledge part of it's not really disputable, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of a dumb conversation to have is like, you know, was he obviously he's the best ever. Or at least one of the best ever if you don't agree with that. So that's not even disputable, but he was giving back so much, like, you know, putting these seminars together for ISSA and stuff. It wasn't just like, you know, there was never a time like, hey, at the end, make sure you sign up for this or you get the next level information when you do this. It was just like, let's get the information out there. We do a good job. You know, people eventually are going to sign up type of thing. So I think he gave back, like he'd go over, to the Gorilla Bench Center in Clearwater, Florida every Sunday to help them squat and things like that. So I think he was giving back a lot more than people might not know.
Interesting.
Taking people like me under their wing, you know?
Very generous. Were there other people?
Very.
Were there other people, Ken, that were, that Fred was working with the way you saw him working with Josh?
Not that I know of. I'm thinking of what he was doing on Facebook. A part of what he was doing on Facebook, he had several authors that he liked very much. A Catholic father named Rohr, Turkish Sufi Rumi, and other people that represented a kind of what Aldous Huxley called perennial philosophy, the highest common denominator of human spirituality, and Fred was very much concerned with the spiritual quality of our lives. And I don't mean that he was pushing religion. He was pushing spirituality through all the religions. So he was very much looking at the health and fitness of whole people.
Was his connection to spirituality constant since you knew him, Josh? And then I'm going to ask Ken again because he probably knew him even longer. Was that always a constant for him?
Since I've known him 100%, yes, but I didn't know him in the early days, you know, so when we squatted, 1,014, I didn't know him at that point, so I can't say then. From what I understand, it was an evolution, mm-hmm. and it was getting more so that way as time went on. So, I mean, because we had so many conversations, probably as many about lifting as we did about the spirituality, too, so it wasn't like... you know, he definitely wasn't a one-trick pony. You could talk to him about anything.
Ken,
and he would approach it with an open mind.
Yeah. Ken, what did he become more spiritual as he got older? A lot of us do, you know, when we start to see the finish line in
front
of us.
Well, from what I understand, Fred told me things, a lot of things, and I, in respect, a lot of them are remaining private. I'll put it this way. He seems to have gone through a transformation from, at one point at least, in a pretty dogmatic religious context to getting over it and becoming more spiritual in a very human sort of way, that found truth and beauty in spiritual expression regardless of where it came from.
And wouldn't you say that's the core of enlightenment, Ken?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I think we all get that.
Trying to be right. He just wanted to share the information.
Right.
Exactly.
It wasn't like he a dogmatic thing, like Ken's saying. It was he wanted to share.
But on Facebook, he would
a lot of religious people just want to be right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they have to be right. Otherwise, they can't convince themselves that what they're doing is correct. If they can't convince someone else, then their own faith weakens. Ken, he had his moments where he got ranty, where he would rant about stuff on Facebook and stuff like that. Was he frustrated with people's lack of sensitivity for spirituality, you think, as he got older?
Well, that and other things. I could think of a number of rants, if you want to call them that. I didn't quite see them as such. I saw them more that, you know, just getting exasperated with stupidity. He would often go after deeply entrenched people that were attached to a fundamentalist version of HIIT, the high-intensity training.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he parried them on his website, his articles about HIIT.
Get like Jedi Mike Mentzer and all.
Yeah. I call him Meth Mentzer. I mean, Fred and I had a lot of common ground about bad dogma. But it shows, you know, he was able to write about bodybuilding and powerlifting with mastery. He wasn't selling a system of any sort. He didn't have a cookbook with finite recipes. The man was an artist in the way that he lived life and himself. Where I saw it the most was he came to Austin 5 years ago. Partly to spend time with me, and partly for him and I to go to the first round of Paleo FX. And that was held in the Stark Center. And the Stark Center is the home of the Todd McLean Physical Culture Archives and the Weider Museum. And before we went to the event, he and myself and his wife, Gloria, took time to have a retreat at a Texas barbecue joint.
Hmm.
And I don't think either one of them had ever had the treat of Texas barbecue brisket and sausage before. That was wonderful. But to me, the deepest expression of who Fred was the symbiotic shared love with his soulmate, Gloria.
Really?
You're sitting there with lovers, mature lovers.
Right.
Who live in that glorious rapture of you know, intimacy.
Yeah.
And I think that was the key to me understanding a lot about Fred.
Was that his lifelong partner, or did he meet Gloria later on in life?
He met Gloria later in life.
Okay. Josh, before we end this segment, is there anything you think that people would be surprised to know about Fred Hatfield without you betraying any trust about things that he wouldn't want you to say? Is there anything that you could tell us that people would be very surprised to know about him?
I would say a lot of spirituality stuff, but I think toward the last few years it was pretty open, so that wouldn't be a surprise to anybody that's been following him. I think he was, I don't think he tried to live like a different, you know, public life and private life. I mean, if you look at, see presidents of other major companies going on and like challenging people's religious dogma on Facebook and stuff. So I think what you saw is what you get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He wasn't trying to hide anything. I mean, Fred was Fred. There was 100% no doubt about that.
You know what? I recently said at my son's graduation in San Diego recently, I said something that got a bunch of people kind of eyebrows raised. And I looked around the table and I said, you know, I'm way too old to start apologizing for who I am. And I think that we all get there. Would you agree, Ken? We all get to that point where we're just not going to be apologetic for who we are anymore. That's something for the young guys.
My son has complimented me by saying that I'm shameless.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Listen, Josh, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your stories about Dr. Fred Hatfield.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Glad to be here.
And we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to actually have his daughter. Is it pronounced Disa or Disa, Ken?
Disa.
Okay. We're gonna.
I learned it from Fred as Disa.
There you go. So we're going to have Disa Hatfield on for a little bit. And so that's going to be really interesting. So we're going to take one quick commercial break. And I ask you all to sit through. If you can't sit through the live show, the podcast will be up on iTunes later tonight. I promise. This is a very, very important show to pay homage to a man who's contributed to your life. I guarantee that Dr. Fred Hatfield has contributed to the quality of your life. Like Dr. Sal Aria said, he has made the world better. And those of us listening to the show, I can guarantee he's impacted your life. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Alaskans agree that Sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish. Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing, so our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today. Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs. But the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more. Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
If you followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then trained, fasted, and remained fasted until my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without it.
Discover the faster way of getting real results with BodybuildingSupplements.com. BodybuildingSupplements.com has powerful, proven solutions like patent technology, Crealkaline Supreme, Mass Pro Synthogen, and Adaptogen N.
RVD here. I love Adaptogen N. Give it a try. You'll see.
Buy Adaptogen N at BodybuildingSupplements.com. See remarkable results in 21 days or your money back. BodybuildingSupplements.com. Since 1993, the trusted source for real results.
Use promo code SUPERHUMAN and get an extra 15% off your Adaptogen N today at BodybuildingSupplements.com.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2
2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back.
Who's going to call me K-Car?
Our next guest, as you can hear in the background, Ken and Disa are already having, they're doing their own show off the air here. We have Disa Hatfield joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I have to know that anytime you have a Hatfield on any show, we start to take it over.
No, that's fine. Your dad had been on my show several times over the past 12 years, so I know. And you know, I mean, I can ask you lots of questions, and I'm happy to have you share those questions about your relationship with your father. But I think a greater indicator of who your father was and his impact on you is kind of the things that you're doing today and the things you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
So while I want to talk about your dad, I want to talk about you too, because that'll give us a feel for his impact on your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just, you know, thank God for Google, right? Because I can actually look intelligent because of Google. Because did you know the name Disa is Norse and means spirited? And so,
yes.
You know, so Fred thought about everything. Nothing was just in passing or by accident. It's clear now that I understand that.
Well, I was just sharing with Ken that, my grandmother, his mother, named me. She was from Norway. And if I was to be a boy, my dad was going to name me Hagar.
Oh, wow.
So just in terms of our Norse background and his, you know.
I think you got lucky that you weren't a boy.
I'm so pleased.
Because everybody would have been like, oh, you were named after Sammy Hagar. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Only those people that know who Van Halen are and 80s rock. So.
Obviously your dad had a great impact on your life and the direction of your life. What do you do? What do you work on? What is your passion?
So currently I am an interim department chair at the University of Rhode Island in kinesiology. So I have absolutely followed in his footsteps in terms of a passion for sports performance. My training, my background was actually done with Dr. William Kramer, who was a very good friend of my father's, and they had done some work together. I actually did my undergraduate with him at Penn State University, and then I actually did my second master's and my PhD at UConn with Dr. Kramer.
Wow, that's
so,
very cool.
Number one, just in terms of like hooking you up with the best there is, you know, in academia, yeah, my dad certainly laid that path for me. My research has focused on sports performance, especially in the field of strength and conditioning. So big surprise there. I was brought up in a gym, so that's what I know. And I would say that if I had a little niche, my favorite area is children and resistance training. So I'm involved in some of the long-term athletic development work. Some of my current projects involve supplementation in teenagers and also physical activity in very young children.
So now I'm going to be very, very selfish and self-serving, but we need to communicate because we have to have you back on the show to talk about a lot of your research. No, because I've talked about the importance of getting kids into physical culture at a young age to kind of counteract what's happening today in the sick aging phenotype. So this is great. We have to have you back on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, exercise is medicine, so I definitely follow that motto.
Yeah. So, Ken, I'm going to turn it over to you because you obviously know Disa better, and you probably know the better questions to ask her that would elucidate the influence that her dad had on her.
I know a little bit about her through her dad, and quite a bit of it was when she would pass a Bill Kramer article to him, he passed it to me over the years. And I love the material. You were raised in a gym?
Yes, I was cleaning his gym when we lived in Louisiana when I was 5 years old. So,
really?
All my life there's been a gym in my life. Yeah.
Picking up those 100-pound plates at five.
Maybe not the 100-pound plates, but yeah, definitely the 25s.
So do you train yourself? Do you get into the gym regularly and lift?
I currently still regularly recreationally train,
okay.
But if you use Google, I am a former national champion myself.
Wow.
I have, I'm a three-time national champion. I am a former holder of two American bench press records that are now held by Leanne Blinn. So if you know anything about powerlifting and women's powerlifting, then my records were broken by the best right now in the sport.
Wow.
So I have best competition lifts in the bench press of 319 pounds at two different weight classes.
That's amazing.
So,
yeah.
I was okay.
That's awesome. So now you just train recreationally, but also like as part of exercise as medicine, which we all do as well. I mean, I'll be 59 on Sunday, and I literally say that I'm going in to take my medicine now to keep me healthy.
I actually also joined a gym on campus here just to go to the group exercise classes. So that was a big step for me. And one of my students saw me in the class, and they started laughing, and they're like, Dr. Hatfield, what are you doing here? And I'm like, you know, I'm 42. I need to start using my heart, I think, now that I'm not competing anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very good. So what can tell the audience something that might surprise them about your dad without giving away any secrets that should remain secrets. Tell us something that would go, wow, I didn't know that about him.
You know, I actually shared this at his funeral. I delivered some of the eulogy, but he was human. The one thing that we have to remember is he was larger than life, but he was human. So a lot of the stories that I have are, and my memories of him are as that human dad, not as the Fred Hatfield that, you know, you guys are speaking of today. But one memory that I shared was, you know, my dad loved the ocean. At this time, we lived out in California, but we lived in the San Fernando Valley. So every weekend, we would take a trip out to the ocean. And this was when he was competing. He was in the height of his career. And every time we went there, he would stop at the 7-Eleven. And one thing, the first thing he would do before he went into the store was to hand the homeless guy that lived outside of that particular 7-Eleven a $5 bill. He would leave it in the man's bag if he wasn't there. And he would go into the 7-Eleven, and he would buy himself a package of those snowballs. You know, those
the coconut-covered snowballs, right, yeah.
Yeah, with, like, the coconut thing.
Right.
And he would come back to the car, and we'd all just be sitting there looking at him, and he would just go, you know what? I've got a competition coming up. I've got to keep my weight up. Yeah, you can keep your weight up with 1,000 other different kind of foods. You know what? It was always those snowballs.
That's wonderful. That's a wonderful story. And you're right. You know, we forget that he was just another one of us, you know, passing through this journey here because everybody looked up to him. He impacted so many lives directly and indirectly, which we've been talking about so far the entire show. But he was your dad. And so was he a strict disciplinarian? Did he believe in... you know, this is the way you live your life, or was he more, I'm willing to learn along with you kind of a dad?
I would go with learning to learn along with you kind of dad.
Mm-hmm.
So, he has four children, and all of us are fairly far apart. My younger brother and sister are kind of close. But like, for instance, between me and my sister, there's 11 years between us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he was definitely, we sometimes discuss it, and he was a different person. He was a different dad for each of us, and neither was a bad dad. He was a great father. Again, everything that everyone has said today, he was this larger-than-life person, and he was a caring individual. And he definitely had a natural kind of protective instinct. He definitely has a dad vibe about him.
Right.
And I think anybody that's met him would agree with that. And that was always there, but I think it was with Josh, you spoke a little bit about his journey of spirituality, and, you know, was this a lifelong journey? You know, was it recent? You know, as he got older, you know, things along that nature, and yeah, that he was different. He was different as he got older.
Yeah, you all are.
And I would say that, you know, God was always there. It was always a part of his plan, but it definitely became more important to him as he got older.
Was it difficult dating for you? Because the boys that would come to the house would be like, you know, Fred Hatfield, Dr. Squad is your dad. I'm afraid to even come into the house.
You know, I think probably because of my upbringing, I had a little different opinion on the type of man I wanted to date. And it tended to be somebody who, for a long time, I had a minimum requirement of they needed to bench press twice as much as me. And then as I got better, I had to just say, okay, you have to at least bench more than me.
Right.
So.
I'm with that, actually. I think that's great. I mean, that's reasonable, you know. As I get older, I while I was raising children, I developed this theory that it's more important for your children to feel that you are their best friend than to respect you. And what I mean by respect is, like, a lot of parents feel that respect goes with discipline, goes with fear. And I'd rather be my child's best friend, because who do they come to when they are making those U-turns in life, but they're best friends and they ask for advice. And if your kid's best friend is the kid up the street, you're screwed. But if you're his best friend, they're going to come to you. And I believe this, and it's worked for me. Was your dad more of the best friend kind of dad, or was he more of the scary, I better not get in trouble, my dad will be mad at me kind of dad?
I don't know that he was either of those things. He was always free with advice, and while I think most people now in the field that look up to him probably think that was a good thing, maybe when I'm 13 years old, I didn't want the advice.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not I was looking for it. but no, he was, I mean, again, he was always this larger-than-life individual, and he was always an honest individual, but at the same time, he's a dad.
Yeah. Ken, jump in here, man.
I'm listening.
So I do. One of the things that I would like to read you something that he wrote to me recently in an email. Well,
please.
Actually, about a year ago. I'm being in the same field as him. I invariably, whenever I go to conferences or anything like that, I would run into people that knew him, or at least somebody that he has touched through his work. And I shared, you know, a hello from somebody with him, and you know, this person was saying he's a pinnacle in the field. You know, you're lucky to have him as a father. And I told this to my dad, not, you know, I think he probably knew that. And the quote from the email is, you know, the strength coaches around the colleges and universities are my biggest audience. Something having to do with books, the PhD, world champion, you know. See, you have no idea how powerful your specific position is right now. You have everything it takes. But let me key on the books and articles. You do lots of really good research read by a handful of professors. I wrote for the kids, the masses who grew up reading my training articles. Of course, they love me.
Yeah.
So in terms of kind of, you know, the way that, I mean, still to this day, he was always, you know, trying to be a mentor and teach. And, you know, that's who he was.
What was his relationship like with his mom and dad?
So I didn't. My grandmother died when I was not very young, but 10. Our family has been scattered all over the country. A lot of us are in New England. That is where he is from, but still scattered. I did not live close by her. I know he kept in contact with her, and I do remember around that time, right before, I think when I was 9, he made sure to take me and my brother at the time to on a trip to visit family members that we hadn't met or hadn't seen in a while. She was one of them. And then my grandfather, and that was the only time they were divorced that I had met him.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in Maine at the time. But, I mean, overall, the importance of family to my dad was very strong. So even when we weren't close in terms of, you know, getting a car and drive 5 minutes, they were an important figure and, you know, important part of his life.
That's good. Okay. Now, yeah. I just thought of something, and Ken, please jump in. Are you a descendant of the Hatfields, of the Hatfields and McCoys? Because we have a lot of them here in Kentucky, by the way. I'm just curious.
No, and of my aunts who are very interested in our genealogy, they will jump in and immediately defend our stance that we come from a completely different line. We were not in North America at the time. Actually,
we're not stubborn people.
My grandfather
people.
Was actually from is Canadian, French Canadian, and on Native American. So. Where the name came from.
Okay.
But no, we are not part of that line.
Okay.
I will not claim that.
I was just curious. Okay.
We would have won the war if we were.
Yeah, I'm sure. Go ahead, Ken. I heard you had a question you were going to say?
No. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that Disa has really filled us in with some things that couldn't have been brought into this discussion. The reason I asked if he had a good relationship with his mom and dad is because I'm listening to everybody talk about your dad, and he is clearly an extremely generous soul. He was a generous soul. There's no doubt about it. He gave time to everybody, but more than that, he worked hard to reach as many people as possible, which was kind of indicated in the email. That you read. I mean, it was more important for him to influence people than to influence people of stature where he would be elevated to that level of stature. And ironically, he was elevated to that level of stature anyway, which kind of fits in this whole idea of be good to people as you walk through life kind of thing. And that's why I was just curious if he ever talked about his dad or his mom influencing him to be that way. If he ever told you stories about grandma and grandpa and how they did certain things that you can now look back and go, yeah, I see where he got that from. Not really.
Yeah. Not, and so my father had definitely a little bit of a different upbringing. He has six siblings, five sisters and a brother. And I know there, for a time in his life, he was actually raised in an orphanage, because simply his mother could not financially take care of all
that
of them.
That happened back then a lot.
So there was never, I want to kind of say there was never any, I don't know what the right word is, there was any disdain or, you know, blame or anything like that. There was always just love.
Right.
And knowing that his mom was doing the best job that she possibly could. When he would tell me stories of his childhood, a lot of his mentors and kind of the people that taught him right to wrong were actually his sisters.
Mm-hmm.
He told one story that I remember in particular was that when he was very young, he was on a playground and some bullies had come along and they were forcing him to swing very high on the swing and they were trying to get him to flip over the top of the swing. Well, along comes his older sister, Alice, my Aunt Alice, and basically chased off and beat up the bullies. Said, "You're not going to treat my little brother like that."
Oh,
So again, when you talk about the Hatfields, we're all like this.
Yeah, I like that. That's great. You know, I have this belief, and I really, you know, choose to believe what I'm about to say, but I believe that we die twice. We die once when our heart stops beating, but we die again when the last person who carries a memory of us dies. So memory to me of people, remembering people, keeps us from having to come back to this this form of life, let's say, you know? And I really feel that there are some people who may not ever have to come back because they did so much good when they were here that they will be remembered forever. And we there's plenty of people like that. And I really, really, really feel in my heart that your dad is one of those people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, again, he was a dad. He was a protector. And he's always been that way. And, another story that one of my other aunts, my Aunt Joni, shared with me. She's younger than him, and, you know, when they lived in the orphanage and he had a paper route like all other, you know, 11, 12-year-old boys did at that time, He got some money from it, and he bought her a bike. She's like, to this, she's in her 60s. She's like, to this day, I remember that was a blue bike. You know, yeah. Everything he could have spent his money on, he bought me a bike.
Yeah. That's just, so his generosity started when he was a young boy.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
That's amazing. What do you think, Ken? Is that learned, or you think that, do you believe in tabula rasa, or do you think that, that he was imprinted with that?
I don't know. The view I have is more evolutionary, that when we became human, we became so as a community. Language evolved and all sorts of things, and he was very human.
Yeah, yeah.
Many people are not human. They're subhuman.
Did we miss any? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Good.
So I think it came natural to him. Fred was a very developed, fulfilled in his humanness.
And for those of you listening to the live show, Ken is actually going to be our last guest because he had a close relationship with Fred. And so we're going to hear from Ken. I'm going to get to interview Ken at the end of the show about his relationship and times with Dr. Fred Hatfield. Disa, is there anything we missed? Is there anything that you want to leave us with before we end this segment?
You know, I think I just want to remind the listeners out there of any generation, old or young, that no matter what in his career, my dad always believed in science. And science has certainly evolved, but that was, in terms of sport performance and physical culture and strength and conditioning, I mean, that was always his foundation. So, you know, for instance, in his advice to me on, you know, the differences between he and I of, you know, me kind of being a little bit more research-oriented and academic and him writing for the masses, that base is still the same.
Right.
Science is there, learning is there, and that always has to be there as a strong base for you to grow.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Ken, you will send me Disa's email address so we can get her back on the show to talk about some of her research?
Right.
Okay, that's great.
Be happy to.
Disa, thanks so much.
Me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. I mean, this has been great. Thank you so very
much. Thank you, Disa.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Ken Kiakin, I hope I pronounced that right. You're listening to a special edition of Superhuman Radio. It's an extra long edition, so if you can't continue to listen live and you got to leave, the podcast will be up on iTunes tonight. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the expert at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-616-0820. That's 800-616-0820. 800-616-0820.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
Quest Keto is making the ketogenic lifestyle more delicious and more convenient than ever. The high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb keto diet has earned a reputation for being complicated. Quest Keto has changed all of that by offering sweet and savory snacks and an entire line of ready-to-go ketogenic meals. They've taken the guesswork out of it for you. From keto cinnamon rolls, pizza, crackers, and more, you can enjoy it all and experience the benefits of this nutritious approach anytime, anywhere. Thanks to Quest Keto. Go to QuestKeto.com to order your meals today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My co-host today is Ken O'Neill. This show is dedicated to Dr. Fred Hatfield. And we've been interviewing people who had intimate relationships with him, learning more about the man, perhaps. One of the interesting things that I am gaining more understanding of is the fact that, and some people even said it, that Fred Hatfield was exactly who he was in front of you as he was somewhere else. I mean, and so as a result, I guess what's happening is we're getting reinforcement of the things that we believed about him. And there's really no mystery. But there are lovely stories, like some of the ones that his daughter, Disa Hatfield, just shared with us. Now we're joined by Ken Kanakin. How you doing, Ken?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for being here. So where did your journey with Fred Hatfield begin? And how did you guys meet?
We met actually 33 years ago. I was at the 1984 Senior National Powerlifting Championships in Dayton, Ohio. And Fred was competing in the 100 kilogram class, 220s. And, Larry Pacifico, who's one of the top powerlifters of that time, came mm-hmm. out of retirement. He was actually promoting the event. But he came out of retirement first time, and so he went up against Fred Hatfield. And the third person was Jim Cash, who was part of Black's Health World, which was one of the strongest powerlifting teams at that time. And so Fred competed, and he placed third at that. He squatted 836 pounds. At that competition, Larry Pacifico was 5 pounds beat him by 5 pounds, and Jim Cash had to set a world record in the deadlift for 836 pounds in order to beat both of them. So it was probably one of the most incredible competitions that I've ever seen. That was also the competition where Lee Moran squatted over 1,000 pounds, 1,003 pounds. And so I was literally 20 feet away. So I got to meet Fred, chat with him afterwards, and got to know him, and was very fortunate to actually see him compete against probably one of the most contested competitions ever.
Ken O'Neill, do you want to jump in here? And
Well, that's the beginning. How did the relationship evolve over the years?
Over the years, so I've always been a huge fan of Fred's material, primarily because he was always scientific. He was always trying to push the envelope. How do you get more power? And not just from a in the gym type of concept, but, you know, let's take a look at the physiology. So, you know, he created things such as compensatory acceleration and, you know, what can you do nutritionally? So if there was anything on the planet that, you know, would help, you know, as far as supplementation, training gear, he was incredible. So in 1992, I owned a gym here in Ontario, and I brought him out to do his certification for ISSA. That's when he was actually doing it. It was one of the few privileged ones to have him come out, ask for him specifically, and spent 3 days with him and videotaped the entire seminar of him presenting and just getting all of his concepts down. And it was really interesting. You know, you hear it, you know, on videos, or you know, read about it, but it's a little bit different when you actually interact with him and, you know, you're very right. He is who he is. Like, I mean, he calls it out straight, but I mean, he can back it up. He can back it up science wise and also through his own lifting.
Yeah.
How did he influence you? So obviously when you met him and then you started to do some things with him, what influence did he have on you, the trajectory of your career and your life?
The biggest thing, the influence that I had, was how do you apply science to lifting? And at that time, I was going through chiropractic college. So when I saw him in 84, I went into chiropractic college in 1986 to basically find out how can you help people who are injured, and to take the science and the rehab and the concepts, you know, to a higher level. In 91, you know, I graduated. In 92, I brought Fred out and saying, you know, how do you work with people? How do you, because he was also into prevention. How do you train intelligently? I think that was the biggest influence that he had, is that understanding it's not just about the training, but it's also about the recovery. And if you do get injured, what are some of the different things? So, you know, he used to write about different types of treatment. So Joe Horrigan, and there's another gentleman, I can't recall his name, out of, I think it was Gary Glum, who's out of California, that helped, you know, Fred with his hand. And he did sort of a version of some soft tissue work to release his hand nerve entrapment that wouldn't allow him to hold on to the bar. So Fred would always be on the search for all these great people and write about it and everything else. So that also inspired me to do seminars. And then in 1999, I did a similar thing where I started bringing in some of the top people in powerlifting, bodybuilding treatments, and how do you make someone lift better? How do you make someone, you know, perform for a longer period of time? Because what will take someone out of any competition is an injury.
Right.
You know, it took me out of competition, and then, you know, I was able to come back. So that inspired me, and Fred was always sort of a go-to person with all of his books, all of his information, and also, you know, to chat with him personally.
Any stories that you could share with us that might actually give people kind of the 30,000 foot view of the type of person that he was?
Yeah. There was one, actually, it was Fred came out to present. I always wanted to have Fred at the Swiss Symposium. And at that time, you know, he basically said he wasn't presenting. He didn't really want to present. And this was back in the 2000s. He said he was busy with ISSA and everything else. And I, you know, respected that. And then when I started again in 2015, you know, I was putting together the schedule, and then I saw Fred's name and I went, you know what? I got to have Fred, but the program was already filled. So I phoned up Fred and I said, you know, can you come out? He said, yeah, I'd love to. And I went, oh, awesome. So I said, you know what? I'm going to fly you and your wife up here. You have fun. Be great to have you here. And he said, listen, you know, I'll promote it. I'll help you in any way I can. I said, awesome. And he said he had a great presentation, you know, for it. So he came out, up to here in Toronto, Ontario in 2015, November, did a great presentation. A lot of people loved it. And then, probably the best story of who he is, one of my friends, he was, took the presentation with Fred, and afterwards was in the restaurant bar area, and he's going through the notes that he took with Fred. Fred walked by and he goes, you were at my seminar. He says, yeah, it was really good. Just reviewing the notes, you know, just so much information and everything else. And he went, you know what? Thanks for that. So he says, close your book. Looked at the bartender and said, two drinks here. And he says, let me talk to you and let me answer any of your questions here. So the guy literally was just him and Fred for the next hour, just chatting.
Wow.
And just sharing. And that's what Fred was about. You know, he was trying to share as much as he could in whatever way and whoever actually wanted to listen. And if he didn't want to listen, he was fine with that too. But I mean, if you showed interest, if you showed, you know, the enthusiasm to how can I better improve? And not only that, how can you improve other people and take it to the next level? And so, yeah, he was very, you know, friendly with everyone, taking pictures with everyone. He was unbelievable. He was great. It was great to see him and Kaz. They were chatting in the hallway. They hadn't seen each other for years, so. You know, all the stories that those two characters had.
I bet. Actually, our next guest also is kind of like that, Dr. Mario Di Pasquale, who's up from your neck of the woods also.
And, yeah, he presented last year for me at Swiss. And he was actually my very first keynote presenter at Swiss in 1999. And he's always been a huge support for me. And again, another person very similar to Fred.
Generous.
You know, kind of a no bullshit guy, you know, this is what it is. And if you came up with anything, he would just look at you and say, you got any research with that? Or is this just, or is that your opinion?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Fred would do the same. And he would just sit there and smile, look at you. And he,
yeah, it wasn't altercative. They weren't digging their heels in to protect their dogma. They were really interested.
No.
You got any research? I'll read it, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, I mean, the one of the best stories was that Fred found some weird tar in the bottom of a lake in Russia and was promoting that and said it's great for this and this. And of course, we all took it. And of course, it tasted like tar. But I mean, he was always looking for what is the cutting edge? Like, how can we raise the level? How can we raise the standard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Ken O'Neill.
Did you have any, I know some of your interests, and this is not an area that's usually talked a lot about. Did you have any discussion with him, particularly with respect to his work in the Soviet Union, about the role of the mind? The Soviets had, from the time they put Sputnik up, what was called a hidden human reserve program. Mm. And their orientation with that initially was like our human potential movement. Was to tap and understand dormant capacities and functions in the human being. And because they were Marxists, they didn't have religion telling them that was a taboo. So they literally went out and scoured the world and understanding mental functions, the psychology of shamanism, of Zen, of anything. And Fred had explored some of that. Did you have any discussion with him about that?
No, I didn't have any discussion with him about that. I knew that he was, again, you know, the power of the mind. And from a neurological standpoint, I knew that he was trying to figure out how can you better optimize your system, your training, your technique in order to lift better. Like, I mean, when he came out to Stratford to present at the certification, I was watching him squat, and I went, why do you squat so narrow? And, you know, wouldn't it be easier for you to squat wider? And especially since he's, you know, Dr. Squat. And he says, Ken, I always wanted to squat wider, but it didn't fit my biomechanics.
Yeah.
He says, I actually have to squat narrower, more in Olympic lifting style. He says, that's where I get my power. I don't get it out of squatting wide. He says, I'd love to because it would shorten the squat stroke.
Yeah,
lever system.
The distance you have to travel, exactly.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so he said, but he was smart enough that he took what he had biomechanically and optimized it to the point where, you know, he was able to, you know, squat over 1,000 pounds. And I trained with Gus Rutwish, who put on, you know, the Hawaiian record breakers and was running, the meet that, you know, Fred squatted that, you know, 1,000 pound squat. And he said it was just unbelievable what, you know, Fred was able to do, even though he wasn't that big of a man. You know, he did everything possible to gain weight and, you know, because he wanted to squat over 1,000 at that meet, which he did. So, and actually quite handedly too.
Well,
but in regards to the mental, we never got into that. In his certification, he would touch on that and he would talk about the positivity-ness of it. And I know Frank Zane at that time was heavily into it. But it really wasn't, talked about that much.
You know,
I don't think people were ready for it, to be honest.
I was just going to say that, you know, I have a feeling that because he was such a master communicator, being a master communicator isn't just about delivering information in a way that it's accepted and easy to understand, but it's also knowing what to leave out.
Yes.
That will detract from the message.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that he realized this may be a little bit beyond them, and I don't want to lose what I'm teaching them and sacrifice it because I also want to tell them about this that they should know about. They're just not ready for it.
Yeah, he knew his audience really, really well. You know, that was the one thing that I've seen him, you know, having him present, you know, a few times here, is that he knew the level that he could talk at. And so if you were at a higher level, he could pull out that information. If it was more basic, he would use analogies and everything else. And we, you know, I really saw that, you know, when he presented for me in 2015. And in fact, what I just set up here this morning for all of your listeners is I'm not quite sure because I don't know what Fred's schedule was, but we recorded Fred's seminar at Swiss in 2015. What I'm going to do is for all of your listeners, they will get access to that presentation for free. I think it's Fred's last presentation. So all they need to go to is SWIS2016.com. You'll see Fred's smiling face there with 1,000 pounds at that symposium. We had someone squat 1,000 pounds. So Fred is with the barbell there. And they can just sign up and they'll get a 90-minute presentation of Fred going through the different concepts of, you know, the seven phases of strength and, you know, ideas on it. And the seminar is called Superpower Seminar.
That's fantastic.
I'm already there. That is very generous of you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, so they can go there. They can watch it.
So I'm at the website right now, just to make it simple for everybody. Once they get to the website, where do they go?
You just scroll down.
Scroll down and look for, here it is. Here,
correct.
Dr. Fred Hatfield Superpower Seminar 2015, yep. SWIS 2015. And you've made it free. Everything else costs something. That's amazing that you've done this. Thank you so very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, you know, it's a tribute to a man that, you know, gave so much and continued, you know, regardless of what state he was in or anything else, and he would always share, you know. So I just want to, you know, pass it forward to a man that basically changed the industry as far as I'm concerned, because no one is at the level in the 80s and the 90s as Fred, as far as training with intelligence, but also being able to back it up on the platform. Like, you know, you have a lot of lab scientists.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about it and everything else, and, you know, which is nice. But I mean, if you write about it and also able to do it, you know, there's nothing better than that, you know. So, yeah. So it's just my gift to Fred and everything that he stood for.
Boy, and there is such good content on this website. I mean, these are people that have been on my show, Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. I mean, I'm just rolling through this. I'm like, wow, John Meadows is on here.
Yep.
This is fantastic. Yep. This is a fantastic resource.
You need to have Ken on whole shows with Ken. I mean, his work, like Fred, is exceptionally visionary, ushering in a new era of physical culture, an intelligent one, an informed one, and one that takes into account the whole person.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
well, we're thanking you.
and that website is only 25% of the videos. So I videotape, you know, everyone from the early, you know, 2000s. So that's on a different website, SwissVideo.com.
What is Swiss? Society of Weight Training Injuries. What is it? Specialists? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is to create a whole new field of weight training sports medicine, because the challenge that you have in bodybuilding, powerlifting, Olympic lifting, and even just recreational lifting and weight training is that what will take you or what will stop your training is an injury. The problem that we have in the medical community, whether it's conventional or alternative, is that no one really understands how to treat a weight training injury, because it's different than a football injury or anything else. Like, I mean, if you have someone that's going to, you know, go for squat 1,000 pounds, everything has to be working optimally. It's a lot different than if you're running or skating or, you know, doing anything of that nature. So the lifts themselves biomechanically have to be sound, but the body has to be sound, you know, from, you know, muscle, joint, nerve, biochemistry, mental, spiritual, energetic. So I brought out all the top people that have always been my mentors and tried to apply to weight training. How can you better optimize it? How do you prevent the injuries? And more importantly is that if you do get injured, what type of treatment do you get?
Yep.
And also, how do you rehab that? And how do you come back from an injury mentally and emotionally? Because, I mean, once you've been injured, now you got that fear factor pop up. And Ken here, you know, knows, you know, a lot about that. How do you remove that? Because that's what will stop you.
I just squatted and deadlifted this morning as a workout routine. I did 5 supersets of a squat and deadlift for the first time since 2016. Because I have an L4, L5, S1 compression that's caused some neuropathy, radiculopathy. But
wow.
I've been seeing a good chiropractor. I've been getting not only the right types of adjustments, but also decompression and the acoustic wave acoustic wave and also some cold laser. And then I hang it completely upside down. And when I say this, people think you got to hang, but you have to feel those muscles relaxing. You could feel the abdominal muscles stretching. You can feel the glutes stretching. You have to. It's not enough just to hang, because your body immediately becomes rigid when you hang. You have to focus on relaxing. And I hang 2 or 3 times a day, completely upside down, but from my ankle. So much, I've been doing it so often that I actually have calluses forming on the above the instep, where the ankle and the instep meet, from being locked into that thing. But this is the first time I felt like squatting and deadlifting it, and I had a great session this morning. So you can reverse these problems. There's no doubt about it.
100%. But if you just went to a chiropractor and just adjusted you, that would not work.
No.
If you were just to hang, it would not work.
No.
If you just had cold laser, the whole thing is that you need a symphony of different type of therapies done at the right time and for the right length of time, which is what you're talking about, in the sense of, you know, you just don't hang for a minute and, you know, go from there. You got to wait until it decompresses and you can actually feel it unlock.
You know how I figure it out, Dr. Kanakin? So when I'm hanging upside down, I take my fist long ways and put it at the top of my head. And as the muscles relax, I can feel the distance between my fist on my head and my fist touching the floor go away till my fist is actually being compressed by my head and the floor. So I can tell now. I found a way to kind of, like the old way we used to gap spark plugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I actually use
my
fist as a gapping tool, and I can tell when those muscles are completely relaxed because I become elongated. And then that's when the work starts. Then I hang like that. Sometimes I hang for 10 minutes at a time now. Never mind the benefits of the blood flow to my brain and everything else. But I mean, I can hang indefinitely. If I had time, I bet you I could hang for 30, 40 minutes like that. That's when the work starts, once the spinal muscles become relaxed enough where you become complete and those side-to-side scoliosis, they straighten out, that's when the work begins.
Yeah.
You know what you're proposing, Ken, I think, I'm hoping becomes really, really important. There are two books out now that I'm about to promote the hell out of. One is called Strong Medicine. It's about 500 pages, oversized, by Marty Gallagher and an osteopathic physician named Chris Hardy. The other, and we've had both these people on when we were doing the podcast, the other is The Barbell Prescription by Jonathan Sullivan, MD, PhD. They're both emphasizing a new medicine to create healthy, long-living phenotypes. And the thing is, with those approaches, what you're proposing will probably have more side effects, if you will, in the way of injuries. That medicine is not competent in addressing whatsoever.
No.
The second item that I think needs to be rolled into your purview is this. In the last week, I've read two articles, one about statins and one about fluoroquinolones, both of which, that one compares the two as far as damage. They're both damaging to mitochondrial DNA. In the case of Cipro and fluoroquinolones, that damage to the mitochondrial DNA affects production of unhealthy collagen.
Right, soft tissue,
imperfections. The stuff results in tendon ruptures. I've been through it from Cipro with shoulder problems that are horrible, and I've been to various specialists who don't even understand that fluoroquinolones cause problems, let alone what do we do about it.
We will definitely have you back on the show, Dr. Kanakin, okay?
But that would be wonderful. I'd love to.
With that being said, in closing, what do you want people to know about Dr. Fred Hatfield? If you were on an elevator and someone said, I've got five floors, tell me, who was this man?
Fred was a leader in a field of weight training, powerlifting especially. And what he did is he integrated the science and also the magic of lifting. So he basically did it for himself. How could I be a better lifter? And then he shared it with everyone else in whatever format, whether it's in person or whether it was in writing or whether it was in audio, whatever way that he could do it. And he was a fierce competitor, but his biggest competition was himself. And, you know, it's just, he basically changed training as far as I'm concerned, you know, in the 80s and 90s, which is some of his concepts.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, some people didn't agree with it, which is fine. But I mean, he could back it up.
Yep.
So, you know, he was brilliant in research, and he was brilliant on the platform, and he was just a good, honest, authentic person that, you know, he walked the talk, bottom line.
We are going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Not too quick. If anybody needs to use the facilities while we're off the air, Ken O'Neill. but we're going to come back with Dr. Mara DePasquale. Ken, thank you, Kanakin. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me and allowing me to share a few stories and tell Dr. Morrow I said hi.
We will. I will definitely say that.
He's a wonderful man.
Okay, and we'll have you back on Supreme Radio sometime in the near future, okay?
Love to.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so folks, stay tuned. We are coming around the bend here. We have Dr. Morrow DiPasquale coming on to join us to talk about his experience and his history with Dr. Fred Hatfield. We'll be right back.
$4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today. Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Hey, this is Carl. I want to remind you of the importance of electrolytes because of all the workout supplements on the market today. I think electrolytes are the most important but the most overlooked. Check out the new Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme. It contains a broad spectrum of electrolytes plus a few extra minerals and vitamins. The lemon-lime flavor tastes great and it comes in single-serving packets that make it easy for you to take on the go. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme banner ad today and save 10% off your purchase.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoKana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of KetoKana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the KetoKana banner ad today.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the Da Vinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless, and the Da Vinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the Da Vinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. So it's interesting, Ken O'Neill. One of the things that Ken Kanakin said was that our next guest was the first person that ever put on a presentation for him. And ironically, Dr. Mauro DiPasquale was my first ever interview on the very first episode of Supreme Radio almost 12 years ago. How you doing,
Mauro?
Yeah, yeah. How you doing, Mauro?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
So we are here today, and we've had a wonderful group of guests, including yourself, paying homage to the passing of Dr. Fred Hatfield. And one of the things that we've learned about Fred, and I can say this about you as well, is the generosity that that he led his life with, and he helped and did so many wonderful things for so many people. Sal Aria said that he probably changed the world, and he didn't mean that subjectively. He meant really. The guy, his ideas, his applications, his influences have touched lives everywhere, whether people realize it or not. When did you come in contact with Dr. Fred Hatfield? Where did your journey begin with him?
Well, a long time ago, back in the 70s, actually. I mean, almost 45 years ago. My first contact was at a powerlifting meet. It was the North American Championships. And I was training with Tom Campbell at the time, and he was in the 181-pound class, and so was Fred. Now, Tom was just a natural for powerlifting. I mean, the guy would take 6 months off, he'd come back, and he'd bench 450. You know, no problem at all. So I figured this was a cakewalk. So I won my class. And so when Fred showed up, and I was talking to him, and, you know, he seemed like a real nice guy, but I didn't think he could beat Tom. And he did. Mm-hmm. Surprised the hell out of me, you know?
Yeah.
So when we were talking about training, and the interesting thing about Fred, now, here's a guy that he knew was a real challenge, and yet he helped him out. He
really?
Helped him, it's unbelievable. And I'm thinking to myself, you're helping this guy out, and he's probably going to beat you next time, you know? So he was very generous. He was really good. We, when he started the men's, I think it was called Men's Fitness back then, he called me because we had been talking in between and everything, and he said, would you do some articles? So I started a column in Men's Fitness, and we were talking on and off. We had a lot of similar interests, obviously, you know, both into powerlifting, both into the medical health and strength, body composition aspects. We both written quite a bit. But he was just a really natural guy. You know, we kept in touch over the years, and we've had ongoing things with the World Wrestling Federation, the World Bodybuilding Federation. We can talk about that.
Yeah, talk about the World Wrestling Federation. It's an interesting story. I don't want to do it any disservice by botching it up. You were called in he asked you to come and get involved for a reason. Tell the story.
Well, there were a couple of reasons. First of all, he was involved with Vince McMahon and the World Wrestling Federation. And the World Bodybuilding Federation had just started up. Vince thought, you know, they needed an alternative to the Weeders. So he wanted to start the Bodybuilding Federation. He was always into the bodybuilding anyways, Vince. So he called Fred and Tom Platz to come in. And Tom was handling the World Bodybuilding Federation, as was Fred. But Fred also started designing the ICOPRO supplement brand for Vince. And we talked about that as well. I helped him out. It was mostly Fred's show as far as the supplements, but I helped him out with some of the stuff that I knew and kind of added to help somewhat with the formulations. Now, I was called on board, first of all, because Vince was in trouble for two different reasons. One was for income tax, and I've got a kind of a good story about that one. And the second one was because some of the wrestlers were actually ordering anabolic steroids or having anabolic steroids delivered at the WWF home office, and then they would pick them up there. I mean, back then, I mean, it wasn't really that big a deal. I mean, Tony Fenton, who is also a good friend of mine, was the first guy to ever get a jail sentence for trafficking in anabolic steroids back in the 80s. So Anyway, so Vince was in trouble in two different ways. So they were after him for the income tax, but the big thing was that he was trafficking in steroids, you know, trafficking in banned substances, controlled substances. So he brought me in because what he wanted to do was start a drug testing program just to show, for example, to the people that he was serious about stopping the drug use in wrestling. So he called me aboard, and, you know, I talked to him. Fred mentioned me because I had set up the powerlifting drug testing back in 81, and I had done it for some bodybuilding federations. I helped out with the Weider Federation with the drug testing, which turned out to be a bit of a joke, but that's another story. So I was called in, and when I talked to Vince, I said, look, there's only one way I'm going to do this, and that's if I have complete authority to do what I have to do. And that means if anybody's caught, if I find anybody that's been taking a banned substance, then we have to, you know, ban them for certain periods of time for the first, second, third infraction, of course, is they're out completely. And so I was given, you know, the full responsibility, et cetera. And we did very sophisticated testing. We did testing now that they're just starting to do with WADA and the IOC as far as tracking the actual metabolites and, you know, changing in the what they call the passport now, basically is, you know, doing a sweep of the body to see exactly where certain levels are for growth hormone, IGF-1, you know, DHEA, the testosterone, obviously epitestosterone, and a whole bunch of other factors. We did that back in the early 90s, and they just instituted the passport like 4 or 5 years ago. And it still isn't as functional as what I had. But anyways, so we did it for the World Bodybuilding Federation, and we did it for the World Wrestling Federation. So it was also not only testing prior to events, but testing anytime. So I could call on them if they're in the bathroom and say, look, somebody's coming over in 5 minutes, he's going to do a drug test. You know, he's going to, you know,
right.
You have to do this or else you're out. Now, Fred and Tom were not involved in that aspect, but they were involved, obviously, with the select number of bodybuilders they had in the World Bodybuilding Federation. And we did catch a lot of positives. Now, if you notice, if you go back to 1991 to 1996, the wrestlers, for example, relied much more on costumes and persona, et cetera. They didn't have the builds they had before or after that time. In other words,
once the drugs came out of the game, their physiques changed.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that. Of course, I mean they were taking, power athletes, starting back in the 40s, you know, the Olympic athletes taking the methyl testosterone and testosterone, and then back in the early 50s when they started with the Danibol, the methandrolone, and various other derivatives of testosterone and anabolic steroids. This is a long game. You know, it's been going on for like 80 years.
Right.
And anyways, we did the drug testing, and we caught quite a few of the people. I can't give you names, of course, because of confidentiality. But they were suspended for periods of time. And a lot of them actually did stop using drugs. Now, we also tested for, you know, narcotics and things like that. But, you know, wrestling is a pretty rough game. It may be staged, the world.
Yeah, but these guys get beat up and they end up on painkillers.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, not only that, but they're wrestling sometimes 2-3 times a week, yeah. Different places they were at the time. And they were beat up. I mean, they needed something for pain. They needed some of the narcotics and stuff. So we allowed them the up to codeine, but not beyond that. For that period of time, we're trying to be really strict and, you know, not allow them to overdo any substance at all. And it was pretty successful. So as far as Vince was concerned, the tax situation was resolved, and the steroid allegations were resolved as well. So back in 1996, we kind of let up on the drug testing. And then in 97, because at the time they were only doing it, you know, whenever they felt like somebody should be drug tested. It was the same with NASCAR. You know, I did. I handled the drug testing for NASCAR as well.
I never knew that.
Like, I did it for a number of federations. Set up drug testing for bodybuilding and powerlifting and NASCAR, the World Wrestling Federation, and I even helped with some of the other professional sports. But it got to the point where it was, well, we're going to test this guy because one, we don't like him, or two, he's acting kind of funny.
Right.
Whereas I wanted, you know, out of competition testing at any time.
Right.
Because if you're going to stop drug use, you can't give him enough time to get off something.
Yeah, it's got to be random. And it's got to
be
unplanned.
Yeah. And it's got to be unannounced random. You know, it's not just, you know, so you announce it, and within minutes or within 15 or 20 minutes, you're there collecting the sample.
Right.
That's the only way you're going to do anything. And of course, you know, there's all kinds of people getting away with drug tests with using signaling pathways, et cetera, now that the water can't even keep up. There's no way they can keep up with it. But that, again, that's another story.
But didn't Fred also want you to introduce the anabolic diet because these guys were shrinking because they weren't using drugs, right?
Yes. I was using the anabolic diet for both the wrestlers and for the bodybuilders. But, you know, it's one thing to lead a horse to water. It's another thing to make them drink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had a seminar. I told them, you know, the basics. This is what they have to do. They have to, you know, cut out the carbs certain days. They can carb up for certain periods of time. As soon as they feel themselves getting a little puffy, they got to go back on a little carb, increase the protein.
High fat.
You know, a lot of these bodybuilders and the wrestlers were on, you know, fairly heavy doses of steroids and growth hormone and IGF-1, long IGF-1. I mean, at that time, IGF-1, for example, people consider that a new drug. But you know what? Back in the 70s, they were using long IGF-1 from Australia.
Right.
You know, so anyway, so we were, drug testing, you know, using the drug testing for all the athletes. Now, if they had followed the diet as they should have, they would have got much better results. But I know some, because I got reports from other people, you know, they'd go to a restaurant and they'd order desserts and, you know, have bread and all this kind of stuff. And they obviously didn't stick to the diet. So I actually got blamed by some of the people that are saying that it was my diet that caused the problem. And I'm going, no, I don't think so.
They didn't follow the diet. That's what caused the problem.
that was a big thing. You
so
know,
we, so Mauro,
we had to go off everything.
Tell us some stories that you can recall about Fred that would help people understand the kind of human being he was. You already told one where he was going to competition, compete against this guy, and he ended up helping the guy. And you're saying, hey, this guy's probably going to compete against you next time, but he didn't care. He was just a generous person that way. Tell us some other stories.
Well, I mean, you know, I had the Pan American Championships back in 1999 in Chicago, and I invited Fred and a bunch of, you know, sort of superstars in powerlifting. And, you know, it's just like, here's this guy who's got this, you know, huge, huge accomplishments, all these books he's written, all the stuff he's done, and he's kind of just low-key there, you know, like talking to anybody that would come up to him, and you know, some people ask for his autograph, and he'd sign the autograph, and it was like Joe Blow, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't take himself seriously that way. He just did what he did because he could do it, and you know, whatever he shared easily, he was generous with his time. And I mean, I remember a couple of people going up to him, and they kind of kept him talking for a while. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, really, they're asking a lot of stupid questions here, you know. And mind you, I wouldn't say that to them, but
right.
Fred, you know, Fred just went along and you know, just talked and gave them what they wanted, and they were happy as you know, pigs and you know what.
Yeah.
So this was back in '99. We kept in contact on and off. Back in 2003, he got that diagnosis with the cancer, stage 4 cancer, and he went on a ketogenic diet, and it seemed that it went away. But now I'm not sure what exactly happened as far as what caused the death.
It's
a cardiac event.
Yeah, it was a cardiac event.
A cardiac event. Okay, yeah. So he was really free of the. Of the cancer then completely.
Right. He had had the cancer, and following that, there were complications due to what I gathered was a botched surgery.
Okay.
So he went through hell for quite a while. I think he got completely free from everything around 2012.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that everybody is talking about the ketogenic diet for cancer today, and Fred harnessed it back then. And I think it's also interesting that everybody's taking credit for the ketogenic diet today, when really Mauro is the one who introduced the ketogenic
Absolutely.
Diet 35 years ago.
Absolutely.
You know what I find interesting, actually? I'll come across some sites, And I've given some presentations at the for Ken Kanakin, for example, and made up slides and stuff. And I'm seeing some of my slides. Of course, they don't refer back to me, but they're exactly my slides, and I see them on various sites. And I've got some books that I've looked at, and they've been taken out of some of the stuff that I've written like 20, 25 years ago, word for word.
Jimmy Moore.
Well, your writing is very, very readable. It's very well done. I've read everything.
I'm actually just getting back into that now. I'm really doing a lot of research. I pull a couple hundred papers a week at least.
But Morrow is writing about stuff that's really interesting now, Ken. And I don't want to get too deep into it, but we talked about it on Superhuman Radio already, about the a better indicator of longevity and health span is remaining anabolic.
I coined that, and anabolone, which is basically everything that's happening in the body that keeps you vigorous. And as you age, instead of the sort of the sarcopenia aspect that everybody talks about, you remain vital. You know, and it's not something when even in your 90s, you know, you're still able to do what you want to do strength wise. You're not falling down because you're tripping on a little chip. You know,
and not to pat myself on the back, but this was my belief 12 years ago, and hence why the slogan of my show has always been "Live stronger, live longer." But
right.
That's another topic. So I want to get back on.
Evans and Rose, the other one at Tufts, made this point in the late 80s. And the top of their preventative list was staying anabolic through anaerobic exercise.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. I mean, hell, man, I started training when I was like, I wasn't even 13 years old, you know. And I knew that was going to help me later on in life, even back when I was in university.
Yeah.
I mean, the stronger you are, the more you lift, the stronger. I mean, I've had x-rays done of my mandibles and stuff, and the dentist would say to me, I can't even see your root canal. Your bones are so dense.
Right.
I mean, I can't see the root.
Listen, I had to go for a shoulder x-ray not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the x-ray technician couldn't tell me anything about what they saw. But she said to me, I can't believe how dense your bones are. She said, we had to turn this up to 3 times what we usually use for regular people to come in here in order to get a good picture for the doctor.
Well, I had that too with the dentist. He says, I can't tell if you've got plaque or not because I can't see anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I grew up watching Carl Nordberg come out and do a 350-pound bench press at 65.
Oh,
and
yeah.
By the time he was 75, he was doing 450.
He didn't get weaker, he got stronger.
He was picking up York barbell plates, the 45s, from the floor, pinch gripping the hub and lifting them, extended arms straight out in front of him.
You know how many people can do that in the world? Not many, let me tell you.
Not many, no.
Now, Fred, going back to Fred, I mean, he was phenomenally strong. When I first saw him back in the 70s, I thought, as I mentioned Tom Campbell, I thought, hey, this guy's going to be a pushover, you know, because at that time, he was 181 pounds. He had the strength that you wouldn't suspect he'd have.
Yeah.
Just by looking at him. He was not like one of these powerful-looking bodybuilders who can bench 250 pounds, you know. This guy was a real deal. He was he just got better and better and better as he got older. You know, that 1,014-pound squat, over 1,000, that was a groundbreaking thing. And it wasn't like he weighed 380 pounds or anything.
Right.
You know,
it was 4 times body weight, basically.
Yeah, I know. It's just phenomenal. I mean, he was... I looked up to Fred, and I think he regarded me well as well. And we over the years we corresponded, we kept in touch, and I was really, really shocked when I heard that he died.
Because he's very that was young. I mean, look, I guess I'm going to be 59 this weekend, so I keep saying, well, 70 is young. When I was 30, I didn't think 70 was young. But the closer you get to that age, all of a sudden you go, well, that's young. But really, he was relatively young. I mean, 70s is not like advanced age anymore, and the guy was sharp as a tack. He was still very strong.
Oh, you know, when I know he was. Sorry, go ahead.
Ken, did we lose you? I don't believe it. I think we lost Ken O'Neill.
Well, that's all right. Anyways, going back to how strong he was, he was actually good in all the lifts, but the squat was his big thing. I remember him and Tom Platz back in when at the World Bodybuilding Federation and the World Wrestling Federation, they would have squat offs. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, talk about it.
Oh yeah, I mean they'd go into the gym and they'd say they would do two things.
when they do, how many reps he could do. Now, you know Tom Platz. He's an animal.
Didn't
right?
he do? Didn't he do 405 for 35 reps or something? It's on
yeah.
the internet.
Oh yeah. No, I watched him in the gym doing you know, leg presses and stuff. As a matter of fact, I got a story about that. He was doing leg presses, Tom Platz, and I thought, okay, I'm going to give you a little extra resistance here. So I put my body weight on it, right? He lifted the weight and me in the leg press.
That's amazing.
You know, and I weighed about 200 at the time. So, you know, that's he already had, like, I don't know how many plates, 10 plates on the damn thing.
Wow.
So anyways, and Fred, so they would do a squat off. Fred would do a heavier weight. Platz would do a little bit lighter weight. But they somehow worked out a formula that did the weight and the number of reps together to see who would win. And it was pretty damn close.
Really? And how
yeah.
and how much older was Fred than Tom Platz at that time?
Oh, I think probably, well, I have to say, 12, 15, 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I had Fred at my house back in Coburg. I had Tom there as well. And, you know, a number of people visited, including some of the wrestlers and... I had a whole football team there once.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we had some good times. I had some furniture, especially built for these guys, because we had Mark Henry. I don't know if he's.
Oh, I know Mark. He trained here yeah. in Louisville when he started working with the when he was going to become a wrestler. He worked with the OVW, which is the Ohio Valley Wrestling, which used to
right.
be the WWE farm team, so to speak. So
I
actually have seen Mark train in the gym. He's a super strong guy.
Oh yeah. Well, actually, he trained in Nova Scotia, with some people as well. Anyways, I had him over at the house, and I had some furniture especially built for these guys because I was having guys over there between 300 and 500 pounds, you know, and so I had these big Chesterfields and sofas, you call them.
Yeah, right.
yeah,
I actually know what they are
because
my mother used to refer to our sofa when I was a kid as a Chesterfield. So
yeah, I know. We're still doing, you know, back in Canada, the Chesterfield. Everybody knows what a Chesterfield is. I used it down in the States, and they say, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Yeah.
Anyways, so I'd have these extra, you know, ones built, and I had one chap over there. He weighed about maybe 380, 390, and he sat down like with a real. I mean, he really plopped himself down, right? And he actually cracked one of the chairs.
Really.
Yeah, and these were built for the heavy guys. Anyway, so Mark Henry was there. At the time, he weighed about, I think, about 450. So I got a couple of pictures of me and him. I looked like a little dwarf, you know.
Mark was a freak of a human being. He really was.
Yeah, there's been quite a few people there, you know, freakish. I remember back in the days with Fred and Tom, back in the World Wrestling Federation, when I was running the drug testing, I would actually, some of the wrestlers would try to intimidate me.
Really?
Which is really funny. Oh, yeah. I won't mention any names, but I'd go to some of the events, and we'd drug test some of the people before the events, and they wouldn't know who. I caught one guy positive, and the next time we were in an event, he kind of corners me, and he says, "I'm not going to turn positive anymore. Am I, Doc?" So I looked at him, because at the time I was listening, and I knew I could probably, you know, I don't care if he's 6'5", I could probably put him in a ball and put
right.
him in the corner, you know.
Right.
So I said, "Yeah, you take it. You're positive. You're out." He says, "Oh, I was just kidding, Doc. Just
yeah.
kidding."
Yeah, he was testing you. He was testing
yeah,
you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he was.
So what do you think people would find interesting about Dr. Fred Hatfield that you could share with us? Something maybe that they didn't know about him.
Well, he was pretty avid, obviously, in his writing and his research. You know, there's... He was just an all-around guy, you know. I mean, there's
a regular guy,
but with a lot of knowledge, with a desire for learning beyond what was known or what was written in papers or research or anything like that. And he was able to extrapolate beyond that and make his own systems, which is something that most people don't do. Most people just take the papers and then they regurgitate stuff, right?
Right.
He went way beyond that, and he would reach into his vast store of knowledge and come up with a diet or a way of eating or a way of training that nobody else had thought of.
Did he influence you, Mauro, in any ways that you could point out about anything that changed in the trajectory of the way you trained or the way you thought about certain things?
Well, we're, you know, Fred and I think as far as our training and stuff, we're kind of loners. You know, powerlifters tend to be loners.
Yeah.
You know, I train maybe one or two people that would be training partners. Sometimes I train by myself. So we kind of, I think we kind of influence each other just by talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not so much that we trained together, although we did train together once. That's a story I can tell you.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, we actually went down to, he was in Toronto at the time, and we both wanted to do both wanted to train. And so I said, look, let's go into University of Toronto, and we'll train there. I know some people there. They'll let us in, and we'll go in the weight room, and we'll do a workout. So we went down there, started to do the workout. We wanted to squat first, right? So the football team was there. So we got two guys, and these guys are taking up all the squatting. So I just went over very nicely, and I said, look, just let us know when you're finished, because we want to do some squatting as well. So the guy looked at me like I was nothing and said, we're finished when we're finished.
Oh, really?
Okay. So we went on. We did a few other things. They were finished squatting. The biggest and heaviest guy there was probably about 350 pounds. A linebacker, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was the best squatter. He did two reps, didn't even go down to parallel, by the way, did two reps of 475, and then, they lifted it back on. And, they were really pleased with the weight they used. We were so pissed off, we started off with that as a warm-up.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did they watch you? Did they see you?
Yeah. Oh, so we started with that. They were really pissed off as we put the weight up. And then as we got up higher and higher, we went up to over 800, okay? At the end, they came up to us and said, who are you guys?
Did they really? So yeah. did when he told them that he was Dr. Fred Hatfield and you said, I'm Dr. Mario DePasquale, did any of them know who you guys were?
No, didn't have a clue, no. Yeah. These guys were just, university guys. Maybe some of them did, but we didn't really stick. When we're training.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's like a mindset. I mean, when I'm doing a squat, back then, and when Fred was doing a squat, I mean, the whole gym could have blown up, and we would have kept the reps going.
I know.
It's a concentration.
You get so deep inside yourself, and you have to, because when you're using heavy weight, and heavy for everybody is different.
Oh yeah.
But when you're using heavy weight, you have to block everything out because you have so much going on inside your head.
You have to control everything
when
you're using heavy weights, or else you're going to get hurt. There's no doubt about that. I got another story for you with the Ultimate Warrior. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah.
He was training in Mississauga once. I went in there to do a training session because I tried to get my training in wherever I was because I was doing, some traveling, obviously.
Right.
So I went in there, and he had finished doing some of his routines, and he's working on his arms. I can't remember now whether he was doing triceps or biceps or something. So I asked him if he was finished with the squat, and he said, yeah, I'm finished, yeah. So then I started doing my squatting, right? And at the time, I was weighing about 185, 190.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked up slowly, because I always did. I wanted to make sure I got my
Yeah, one plate, right, two plate, three plate, right, four plate, five plate. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I worked up to about 750. But anyways, as I was working up, he went over to the guy who I knew, who owned the gym, and told me this later. He looked at me, and this was the same thing as football. He said, "Who the hell is that guy?"
Isn't that the most wonderful feeling in the world?
Yeah.
When people underestimate you because you look a certain way, and then they watch you train, and they go, "Wow, who is this person?" So Fred got into spirituality and also deeper into the connection between or the importance of the mind, kind of like what Frank Zane has been talking about for a long time. And Fred started to really make that step into the forefront more so. He wanted people to understand the importance of that aspect and its contribution to physical culture. Was he that way when you knew him 35, 40 years ago?
It's interesting that you should say that, actually, because we were both into philosophy as well.
Really?
When I was going in medical school, one of my side, I got bored, So as a side thing, I took a philosophy course, 30-year philosophy course, and I tied genetics in at the time with philosophy and determinism. And you got to understand, this is a third-year great philosophy course, which I just interjected myself into.
Right.
And after, then we had to do a thesis. So I did a thesis, and I did it on biological and philosophical levels. And I got an A- for it. And he says, you know what? I don't agree with you, but I love your arguments.
Did he really? That's awesome.
Yeah. But I was introduced.
So he appreciated a person who could articulate their point of view, yeah, aside from whether or not he agreed with that point of view.
Well, you know, I was into existentialism back then, and the very Sartre and Merleau Ponty, et cetera, all those people, the more the continental European thinking, and so I integrated that with the genetics. And came out with this paper that he found very, very different from anything he's ever read.
Wow!
So it was fun. And Fred was the same way. I mean, he wasn't just brawn. He was also brains, obviously.
Yeah.
And his thinking went beyond just training and stuff. He also looked at a higher aspect and just what's going on in the world. What's the meaning? Why are we here? This kind of thing was part of his philosophy as well.
Yeah. We're coming to the end of this segment. Is there anything that you would like people to know about Dr. Fred Hatfield now?
I just got one. He was a great guy, very humble, very accomplished, and willing to give his time and energy to almost anybody. He accomplished so much. He was just someone that most people should really look up to, especially in sports and in nutrition and all aspects of health and body and mind.
Yeah, great. And the common thread in everyone's discussion is his generosity, and that's something that's the truth about that is that's something that you share as well, being a very generous person. We got to end here, Mauro, but you're going to be back on the show soon anyway. I think you and Elisa are working on new dates right now.
I agree. Anyways, it's great that, I have to applaud you about holding this on Fred because it's really warranted, and I'm really glad you did it.
You know something, Mauro? I've done a tribute show to every one of the fathers of physical culture, Dan Lurie, Jack LaLanne, when they passed, because we're so caught up in the now, we forget that there were people who they're the ones who created this path, and we should know who they are, just like history. Who the first president was. Do you know why you're doing the thing you're doing now? Do you know who really started doing it? It's so important to pay homage to the people who created the things that we do today. And so I do it because I feel like I owe them something, because I am benefiting today as a human being, because of the things I learned from people like Dr. Fred Hatfield or Dan Lurie or Jack LaLanne.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I've always said we're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, I like that. And on that note, we're going to end. All right, look, we're going to talk to you soon. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to have Ken O'Neill on so that he can talk about his relationship with Dr. Fred Hatfield. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You, too, can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced.
Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advance contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advance. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advance banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Hey, this is Carl. I want to remind you of the importance of electrolytes because of all the workout supplements on the market today, I think electrolytes are the most important but the most overlooked. Check out the new Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme. It contains a broad spectrum of electrolytes plus a few extra minerals and vitamins. The lemon-lime flavor tastes great and it comes in single-serving packets that make it easy for you to take on the go. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Jigsaw Electrolyte Supreme banner ad today and save 10% off your purchase.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it. Quest Keto is making the ketogenic lifestyle more delicious and more convenient than ever. The high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb keto diet has earned a reputation for being complicated. Quest Keto has changed all of that by offering sweet and savory snacks and an entire line of ready-to-go ketogenic meals. They've taken the guesswork out of it for you. From keto cinnamon rolls, pizza, crackers, and more, you can enjoy it all and experience the benefits of this nutritious approach. Anytime, anywhere. Thanks to Quest Keto. Go to QuestKeto.com to order your meals today.
If you followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then trained, fasted, and remained fasted till my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without it.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Don't ya? I think this is the longest show we've ever done. It will be 3 hours when the show is over. But, you know, how can you do a life like Dr. Fred Hatfield's justice and try to squeeze it into 2 hours with more breaks? I mean, we've cut breaks out of this show on top of everything else. And now I get to interview my co-host, Ken O'Neill. Ken, can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great. When did you first meet Fred Hatfield?
I was sitting here trying to remember that myself. I'm going to say 2009 or thereafter.
What was the meeting like? How did it happen?
I reached out over the internet. I think I sent an email at that point. I'd read things of his and wondered. And it took off. We had some exchange by 2010. It was not uncommon to be out on my veranda having a morning coffee and my cell phone to go off, Fred calling to talk about something.
And
so, we became pretty fast friends pretty quickly.
So were the discussions in your case, because you are very philosophical and you're all about, you know, the whole evolution of the human condition, were they those types of conversations or were they about training?
All of the above and more. In those days, I was doing research work for a medical clinic and beginning to publish a blog. The blog went for close to 3 years. Fred was a big fan of that. The intent of the blog was initially an evolutionary view. it hinged upon three epigenetic factors constituting health and not taken into account by our medical system, which were nutrient-dense whole foods, anaerobic exercise, and the mind, the emotions, thought. And we develop a conversation around those. Supporting those three pillars, if you will, is publications in all kinds of disciplines, some new, some old. So it was a discovery process, and Fred had great fun. I think the way to characterize it is we were 2 years apart in age. We came in the wake of the physical culture movement that had reached its high point in the 20s and early 30s with Bernard McFadden and his empire, and then was on the wane, being replaced largely by the authoritarianism of orthodox medicine, of the pharmaceutical and scalpel model of health. And the good thing is that we came of age in a time when there were old-timers, not so old-timers, around from that previous physical culture worldview that planted seeds of credible doubt in our minds. It taught us how to use science to cut through the thicket of BS, regardless of where the BS came from. So, if you look at Fred's work, he's very much a Renaissance-type figure. He excelled at all kinds of specializations, but he was a generalist. He was a generalist in the way that physical cultures have tended to be. And me too. In my case, I took a very different path. I was interested in the powers of the mind. And I had people in California growing up, one named Tommy Kono, who was probably the greatest Olympic lifter the United States has ever had,
mm-hmm.
and another named Bill Pearl,
mm-hmm.
and a third named Vince Gironda that were all touting the powers of the mind. Fine. What were they? I went on to college, majored in philosophy and psychology. And by the time I was finishing an undergraduate degree, I was totally bored because I was a gym rat studying these things to become a better gym rat, a better physical culturist. And I was getting songs and dances by academicians who'd never been in a gym, and if you looked at them, looked like walking death most of the time. So what did I do? I got a scholarship and went to a Japanese Buddhist graduate school because some pro wrestlers had introduced me to Buddhism and judo when I was still in high school. And I knew that they had maps and they had methods of understanding what we're made up of, what our potential is.
Mm-hmm.
And I got sent to Japan for advanced training and came back like a Zen master 45 years ago. Well, that complemented what Fred was interested in. Fred had been off to the Soviet Union, and in the wake of the Soviets in 1956 launching Sputnik, the first satellite, the Soviets were talking about launching people into deep space to go to other planets. How were they going to do it? What were the people going to do for years of space travel? Well, the Soviets had it in mind that maybe they could interstate to suspended animation, they could use hypnosis, they could use meditation, who knows what they could use, but there was something to be discovered then. And they had the advantage of being Marxists in that their world was material. They didn't have any religious taboos. So they could go study anything they wanted to anywhere. They could study entheogens, they could study Zen, they could do yoga, they could do shamanism, hypnosis, anything that humans claimed gave us access to and development of powers of the mind. Well, Fred went off to the Soviet Union, I think in the 80s, studying with their lifting coaches, and in that period in the 70s and 80s, America had just fallen into the pits for Olympic championship in lifting. The Soviets and Eastern European bloc dominated. And it turned out their periodization methods of training, which he popularized and Charles Poliquin popularized, had a great deal to do with it. But they also had abilities to work with the powers of the mind. And Fred is the only person I know that really tapped into the some depth of what they were doing. And we compared notes about that and a lot of other things.
You know, it's funny. You got somehow, we couldn't hear you, but you could hear us. I don't know how long you actually hung on, but Morrow talked about that, that one of the things that he and Fred had in common was philosophy. So when Morrow was in medical school, he was bored, in his words. So he took a philosophy course, a third-year philosophy course. He just jumped in without any of the prerequisite classes, and he did quite well in it. And he wrote papers about philosophy. And like you, he was looking for pursuit of philosophy to aid him in physical culture. But one of the things that he and Fred had in common was their love of philosophy. And Fred would say to him, I don't agree with what you're saying, but I love your argument, you know, which was really, I mean, that's a wonderful attribute to have, to be able to disagree with someone, but love their argument. I mean, that's just amazing.
Well, I think it's because we reach a point of understanding in which the dogged insistence upon theory, a theory, if we understand our mind well enough, we come to understand that those theories are just that. They're constructions of the mind. They're not the absolute truth. They're, as I was told once, they're lies that have useful outcomes or not. So the gauge of a theory really is, what does it buy you? If it doesn't buy you anything, why hang on to it?
So you and Fred talked about a lot of different stuff. Everybody has shared stories so far without kind of betraying trusts about Fred. And these could be humorous or anecdotal, but they give you a feel for who he really was. Do you have any of those stories?
Yeah, I have two. We do a lot of work with canine dog rescue and foster care and coordinating transfer of dogs. There's a underground railroad of people that move dogs around, dogs that have been abandoned or are in kill shelters or what have you, and get them foster cared. If they need medical attention, they get that. And then feeding them, moving them on until they find their adoptive family. And Fred and Gloria have been very generous in supporting those activities.
So Gloria's name came up a few different times in today's conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Has Fred been married a couple different times? Or
I don't know how many times. Gloria's Mrs. Hatfield that I knew. I believe Deesa's mom is a different person.
Okay, all right.
I don't know the depth of that. The other thing that I would say is humanizing about Fred is what we were talking on. I have a group of friends, and Fred was one of my two closest friends. The other is a guy named Bob Guida, who is very much like Fred. He was, in 1966, Bob did something that's never been done before since, drug-free. He won Mr. America, Mr. Universe, and Mr. World. And then he won, I think, three master's degrees and a PhD in physiotherapy. Very much oriented like with the sort of things Ken Kanakin was saying.
Right.
What we share in common as physical culturists, we came into a world in which there was an old school physical culture that was being invalidated, and often on very good grounds, by the emergent new science of medicine of the 1940s and 50s and 60s, where Bob and Fred have both thrown their hat in the ring was in being on top of those sciences and revalorizing physical culture in a way that is it hasn't shaken the world awake yet, but it's going in that direction. I mentioned Marty Gallagher and Chris Hardy's book and Jonathan Sullivan's book, both
health books, medicine books, co-authored or authored by physicians on barbell medicine that is congruent with what Dr. Morrow was saying. Fred's just been a real superstar in that field, and what we were recognizing is we're in the odd situation, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, by the year 2020, the domestic national product of the American healthcare industry will become the fifth largest economy in the world.
I thought it was already the third. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought it was already the third.
This is JAMA.
Oh, okay.
It ranks third as cause of death.
Yeah.
But the irony is that while we've got the richest healthcare system in the world, it rates, depending on the study, 35th to 40th in the world. So we've got the richest third world healthcare system in the world. And the third leading cause of death is medical intervention. With these guys, what we share in common in philosophy is the philosophical toolkit for deconstructing delusion. The science that we call medicine today is at best semi-science and a lot of commercial science. Our concern is, and I can cite it from where I live, in Central Texas, the forecast for kids in middle school today is they're going to be the first generation whose parents bury them without surviving them.
Children die before their parents, I know. But you know, and I hate to say what I'm about to say, because it's going to be misconstrued, but in the past, we've had plagues that have killed literally millions of people in one fell swoop. Today, we have chronic disease that is thinning the herd and removing genes from the gene pool on a much slower basis. And this is why what I have been saying literally for probably 6 or 7 years now, that the new evolutionary selection pressure is where you get your information from. That will determine whether or not your genes will be here 200, 300 years from now. Because when your children start dying before they can reproduce, it's game over for your lineage. That's it.
Well, the other factor that we need to look upon is the effect of pharmaceuticals on our biochemistry. We're using synthetic substances. I've just in the last week discovered that both statins and fluoroquinolones are disruptive to mitochondrial DNA. I don't know how true that is of other pharmaceuticals. I know Plavix is real detrimental to it. What are we doing? We're permitting drugs to be used and ignoring.
But this is why I say so we are never ever going to change the pharmaceutical agenda by waiting for the government.
Not.
But the only way, but how we do change it is by staying healthy, by applying the things that Dr. Hatfield talked about, that you talk about, that I talk about on the show, and becoming this private club of people who don't go down the sick aging phenotype path. And the pharmaceutical company is going to, the agenda is going to end. And the reason is they're going to kill all of their customers over the next 100 years. And then there's going to be our people, our children, our lineage that are going to go, no, we don't do that. And then it's going to go away. And then 200 years from now, they're going to look back at this time right now, the way we look back at the Tudor dynasty in England and say, oh, how barbaric. They dragged people through the streets. They lit their intestines on fire and they cut their heads off. How barbaric. 300 years from now, they're going to look back at this time and space and time. They're going to go, oh my God, how barbaric. Those pharmaceutical companies were killing and harming so many people. But we're in the thick of it now. And if you don't understand that, you will be that group of people whose genes won't be here.
What we have been discussing as a little cabal, a little think tank, is how do you educate? What we've been discussing, our agenda has been a grassroots renaissance,
right,
in healthy phenotype development, survivors. Next evolution. And what's been at the core of that is something I pulled up that everybody got inspired with. The guy that invented developed the polio vaccine and refused to patent it, he thought it would be barbaric to patent something that healed people, was Dr. Jonas Salk.
And Dr. Jonas Salk said, we've been through the first two phases, the first two laps of evolution. We've been through physical evolution of the planet. We've been through biological evolution. And now we need to recognize that to become the survival of the wisest is the next task of evolution by means of meta-biological evolution, evolution of mind. And the more I've looked at that, I realize we don't understand our mind. We need that third pillar of understanding mind, not as, you know, placebo effects or things like that, that really simplify. We need to understand the reality that we live in, and it's not a matter of putting suggestions in there. It's a matter of understanding how our minds operate, to a point where we can liberate ourselves from the adversities, which are mostly emotional, and live in an innate sort of state of I don't know what to call it, a kind of a blissfulness, a peace.
We talked about it, you and I talked off the air about my show I did yesterday with Sean Wells, and we talked about, I said that microdosed LSD is going to become the nootropic slash limitless pill of the future. And because one of the things it does, besides heightening awareness, improving neuroplasticity, and all these other wonderful biological things, is that it gives you a sense of awe and gratefulness about the littlest things in life.
Right.
And that, and you know, and really at the end of the day, that is the antithesis of the painful, dull existence that 90% of the population feels today.
Right. Now, with the three guys, including myself, I mentioned, we recognize that. We recognize, with or without entheogens, that is a natural primordial state of consciousness or life or being or whatever you want to call it. And we all recognize the big hook for us in training has been it induces that state.
Yes. Yes. It does.
But we don't generalize it. We leave it in the damn gym when we leave.
Right.
Nobody in physical culture said, hey, wait a minute. Don't leave your native indigenous bliss state here. Let it generalize through your whole life.
Right.
You're not going to be a victim of fear-mongering medicine then.
We're coming close to the end here. So what do you want people to know about Dr. Fred Hatfield?
Well, I think that immersing themselves in what he's left behind for us is a start. My motivation in going after this, doing this program, has been the Fred I've known, the visionary, wanting to mainstream this into a renaissance for our grassroots. That we all have children, we all have grandchildren. We reach a point where it becomes basic to value what we're passing on. And in this case, it's perpetuity of the species.
I also think that the common underlying theme that has been presented by every single guest of today's show was the vast well of generosity that this man had. I don't think we'd be talking about him if that wasn't true.
People loved him.
Yeah, exactly.
And not because he was Dr. Squat that did a 1,000-pound squat.
No, because there's a lot of guys out there that can squat a grand, and they won't even be remembered.
Well, yeah, some of them are people you don't want to spend any time around.
Yeah.
This fellow had a presence. I remember going with him to the first PaleoFX conference 5 years ago. He walked through that place with grace. People just, you know, were... I'm sure most didn't know who he was, but were sensitive to his energy.
Yeah. Yep. I have to ask you this personal question.
Sure.
So you said that you're only a couple years younger than Fred, right?
Two.
Yeah. How did his death affect you emotionally? Not just about, not intrinsically because you lost this friend, but also bringing mortality into the front and center.
I think that's been a thought on and off since 2013.
Since your heart stopped, yeah.
Yeah. It brought it closer. I think the emotional thing is when I began to think about doing this show and then you and I talked, my frustration was Fred wasn't there to talk about doing it with.
Yeah.
And that got resolved one night. Much to my surprise, I woke up from having a long conversation with him in a dream.
And what did you, what came about in that dream?
Well, partly about the show, to be frankly honest. He was also discussing with me that we don't die as consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to give that an ontological status. We've got plenty of people out there that will say I was just dreaming, I was hallucinating. I don't know. I've read the 800-page book, Irreducible Mind, that's full of evidence that mind is more pervasive than we think.
And this has nothing to do with spirituality. For those of you listening to this, this has nothing to do with spirituality. We've talked about this on various shows that we did in transevolutionary fitness podcast that we did. What is it called? Neonetics? I'm trying to think what the name of that is. But
Noetics.
Noetics, thank you. So this has nothing to do with religion. You know,
it's nothing to do. It probably has more to do with quantum physics.
I was just going to say, it's actually quantum physics. This is where quantum physics gets into energy, transference of energy. You know, we've talked about the fact that they've actually think they've weighed the spirit, you know. So, you know, I hope it's true. I do.
Well, the key thing to me there was, and you can take the dream any way you want, but Fred has certainly survived as an understanding within myself to have a conversation about how to do a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. Very, very cool. And on that note, I think we have to pull the plug. This was the longest show I've ever done, and I'm glad that it was in honor of...
Well, it was such fun working with you again, Carl.
I know. And you and I are going to work together. We're working on some ideas right now, so we're going to get back on the air. My problem is that I am just dancing so fast, and it's just Elisa and I, and it's just there's just more than I can do in a day, every day, every single day. So things slide, but we will be back on the air again with a new show. So there you go.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's all we've got. I want to thank our guests. I want to thank Dr. Sal Aria, Josh Bryant, Deesa Hatfield, Ken Kanakin, of course, Dr. Mauro DiPasquale, who'll be back on the show, I think, in 2 weeks. And you, Ken, because the reality is, while I wanted to do this show, you did all the heavy lifting, and I just kind of sat here and enjoyed it. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And we'll see everybody, since tomorrow's Friday, and we're not doing Casual Friday right now, I'll be back on Monday. So I hope everybody has a great weekend. Pass this show around. There's a lot to be learned about people who want to leave a legacy. You can look at Dr. Hatfield for a blueprint. And we'll see everybody Monday with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you for listening.